we do have an agenda circulated. There's no doubt, colleague from small business, thank you for the support. There's actually two areas of our program, which will be the briefing by the Companies Tribunal. We'll actually also take the briefing by the CIPC. There will be four sets of minutes as well on the program that we have circulated for members to actually have a look at. I think yesterday I actually did, we did circulate as well the program of the oversight visit. I would actually maybe want to take comments if ever there are any, because there should be applications for our program. That's January next year. If ever maybe there are serious issues, we can pick up from that. So those three items, it's what we have to look at today. If I can just check with the members of the committee if ever they're comfortable for us to proceed in that way as proposed. Good morning. Mulder.
Chair, it's fine with me if you find it in order and move that we adopt the program for the day.
Okay, there's a move on Mutawu.
Thank you, Chair. I second the adoption of the agenda.
As proposed, circulated, the agenda is agreed to. We can then proceed. Let me actually ask then the Companies Tribunal to be able to actually talk to us. We do actually have the chairperson, and on the side on our part, I think there's only one apology I received of Honorable Thring. There's no other apology that I did receive, but I think in terms of the Companies Tribunal, we do actually have the chairperson here who will be able to actually then introduce himself and the team. Dr. Mohamed Chikte. So if maybe we can allow you to actually talk to us and then be able to actually pick up on the presentation of the report, annual report, first and second quarter performance report for 2019-20 as well. Floor is yours. Welcome and good morning.
Good morning, everybody. Firstly, thank you for inviting us to the committee. And honored and privileged to be here, so thank you. My name is Ali Chikte. I'm part-time, I suppose, chair of the tribunal. I'm accompanied by my COO, Ms. Marichetsa Monica Lelingwani. I've been with the tribunal just over a year and a few months, and the COO has been here for just over 6 months. We're fortunate enough to have Ms. Irene Matatu, the CFO, who's been there for over 5 years, so her guidance and her experience in the tribunal is always welcome. You've all got the presentation, which is on the slides. You've got the slides, and it's been presented. Going to get into the presentation. The first page is our table of contents. It gives you a guide of what you want to do. So I'm going to go through it slide by slide. And So first we'll talk about the background and mandate of the tribunal, then our staff makeup, the benefits of our services, our annual performance plan, contribution to the national development plan, the key highlights of the annual report, the nature of cases we deal with, turnaround time, human resources, challenges, the budget spent per program, revenue collection, expenditure, our historical financial performance, issues raised by the Auditor General and progress we've made, and lastly, the first and second quarterly performance report. I will present some of it, and then I'll call on the COO and the CFO to talk on the expertise as well. Okay. Now, The Companies Tribunal was established in 2008 in terms of the Companies Act and started operating in 2011. Now, I was appointed more than a year and a half ago, and the primary function of the tribunal and our mandate is to resolve disputes amicably, right? Provide an alternative for the judicial processes, and I think litigation has been taking years, and the tribunal is there to ensure that disputes are resolved quickly and efficiently, either through mediation processes, arbitration, or decision-making processes. So it provides access to all South Africans to form companies, right? It's not just for the wealthy companies. It's also for the wealthy companies to encourage investment. I mean, if people want to invest in South Africa, they must ensure that there's an efficient way of resolving disputes, as opposed to waiting for a number of years to go to litigation. But it's also there for all South Africans to form companies and to know that they don't have to be caught up in litigation. So that's our primary mandate as a tribunal. We independent, subject to the Constitution, and our vision is to provide a world-class adjudicatory and dispute resolution organization, basically to provide access to justice to all South Africans and to people who want to invest in the country, because that also touches on all South Africans. It creates jobs at the end of the day. If companies can flourish and know they have an efficient mechanism of dealing with disputes, they will want to be in South Africa. The composition is myself as a chairperson. I'm not there on a full-time basis. My full-time job is I work at the university teaching dispute resolution. And I think some of those skills come into play as a chairperson of the tribunal, which wants to push the idea of using mediation as a means of resolving disputes. We've got 12 members who are appointed by the minister, and they were on a part-time basis, and they're quite capable members. A lot of them are quite senior in the legal profession, have been acting judges, advocates, attorneys, academics in company law. So got quite a robust group of individuals who are quite opinionated and bring some insight into where we want to take the tribunal. We've got a staff complement of 12 staff members. And I've got two of them today. The COO is unfortunate to have as and the CFO. If you look at the next slide, which is the makeup of the tribunal and who we are, you can see there's filled funded positions, vacant positions, unfunded positions, and people not actually in positions. The people who are not actually in positions, it's quite a strange kind of term, but basically it's people who are not there full-time, right? So it's basically me who's not there full-time and a few of the other committees that we have there. Right? RAMCO, Risk Committee, the part-time members are not there full-time, and the IT Steering Committee. But one thing you notice from our structure is there's a lot of vacant positions, and that's primarily because we underfunded, or we don't have enough funding to fill those positions. We'd like to fill those positions, but we don't have the funds. When the tribunal was established, there was a surplus that we've had, and that surplus we've been relying on for the last few years to cover the deficit. And the reason we had a surplus is because all the positions weren't filled when the tribunal was established. And unfortunately, that surplus is going to come to an end at the end of this financial year. And so while it seems that a lot of our positions are vacant, what's happened is that a lot of our staff are filling two portfolios in a sense. Our research person does marketing. Our COO does a lot of other functions, and our CFO doesn't have the complement of financial people that she would like to have. She's got two, but she works overtime in order to ensure that there's clean audits and that our finances are in order. So our structure, we had a look at our structure to see whether what we needed and what we don't need, and this is the latest structure we've ideally like to have as an organization. But as you said, with lack of finances, we are basically got staff who are doing more than one function, which, the benefits of the tribunal, the next slide, basically As I said, the idea of the tribunal is to provide a cost-effective means of resolving disputes. Right? We don't charge for our services as a tribunal. One may say, why don't you charge? Why can't you charge the fee so that people can, so that you get funds to run the tribunal? The problem is that even if we had to charge, we're not going to make that much money. And secondly, we're trying to encourage people to think differently about resolving disputes. Right? We're trying to tell them to don't go to courts, don't litigate, come to us, and let's talk about resolving our disputes. Let's resolve it amicably, you know. And it's a change in mindset. It's developed in labor, it's developed in family law, but I think in company law, you still have a lot of lawyers who are the gatekeepers of the way in which disputes are dealt with. And mediating disputes and resolving them amicably really means less fees. And so it's the idea is to change the mindset of the profession and also the client, the company at the end of the day. If they use us and they use mediation, it will save them costs, and those costs can be used elsewhere, can be put back into the economy. Right? So we want to create an informal way of responding and dealing with disputes. Litigation, in a sense, is outdated. South Africans, we are able to talk about our disputes. You know, we've done it politically, and I think we should do it legally as well. In the labour setting, we do it through the CCMA. Family setting, they do it to family mediators, and I think commercial mediation should be growing as well. So informal, flexible, cost-effective way. Also a way of maintaining business relationships. Litigation destroys relationships. We want to maintain those relationships so that the economy can flourish. Also, if they use ADR, it's a sense of self-worth we try and put in parties. If you're going to mediate a dispute, you control the outcome of that dispute. Right? And as opposed to a neutral judge making a decision. And the idea of self-ownership, ownership of the outcome, I think it's an important value, promotes ideas of dignity, which are fundamental to our constitution, maintains, we want to manage the reputational risks for the companies and for the country as a whole, ensure that settlement agreements are the main means of resolving disputes as opposed to litigation. So the tribunal, we believe, has a bigger picture in mind. You know, since I've come into the tribunal, since the CEO's come in and the CFO, the idea is to contribute to the country to make sure that we have this cost-effective means of resolving disputes. And I think it's important in transforming our country and in ensuring that everyone can form companies, and it's important for investment. I'm going to look at the annual performance plan. I'm going to talk about the adjudication processes, and then call the CEO to talk about the administrative side of it, which is in every day, and then the CFO will talk about the financial aspects. Right. Now, adjudication, as I said, our primary function is to resolve disputes. Now, where are we with regard to resolving disputes? Where do we want to be? Now, if you look at the I'm going to jump. If you look at the next slide, I'm going to just jump. The National Development Plan, before I look at adjudication. What we're doing is not in isolation. We're trying to do things in accordance with the National Development Plan. And a lot of what we're doing is to try and achieve those goals. I mean, we gave you some examples on slide 5 to reduce costs, for example, and that's the key of what we're trying to do, right? By making dispute resolution cost-effective and, in fact, free for parties, they don't even need lawyers, we are able to reduce costs of regulatory compliance through our dispute resolution mechanisms. We are able to, the NDP requirement of broader participation, more inclusive economic growth. I mean, by with the use of mediation, I mean, mediation is essentially participation. People participate in the outcome of their lives, in the outcome of their disputes. You know, litigation processes are outdated. The way courts are structured are outdated. You know. The next NDP requirement: the capable and development state institutional capability. We want to ensure that the state, our functions are effective, they are efficient, and we do so by ensuring that we have clean audits. And I think for us that's important. Even though we have limited finances, I think because we have limited finances, we've got to check every penny. And that's why clean audits are important for us, and having staff working overtime in more than one portfolio, I think it's important for us to achieve our goals. Okay. And I want to go to the annual report. I'm going to go to slide 6 on adjudication. I'll talk on adjudication and then the CEO will come and talk on the administrative side of it. Now, as I said, our primary goal is to ensure effective resolution of disputes. And if you look at slide 6, our targets, we exceed all three targets for adjudication. Our target is to have 90% of unopposed disputes to be resolved within 30 days, opposed disputes 90% within 40 days, and all ADR cases within 25 days. Now, I mean, if you look at that, I mean, resolving a dispute within 30 days, you're not going to get that in a court. I mean, you're going to be filing papers, and that alone is going to take more than 30 days. 30 days to resolve a dispute. And the fact that we're able to achieve 93% of it and 100% of opposed ones, I think it's something that we should push for, because, as I said, litigation is outdated. It's acrimonious. It takes too long, and it's too expensive. I mean, most lawyers can't afford their own fees. So one's got to think differently about this, and I think tribunals are essential in doing that. And resolving disputes in 30 days means a lot for a small business, for a small company, for a one-person or two-person company. Not getting their payment in time makes a difference to their life. You know, and we deal with it all the time. We deal with small businesses that we meet often. Sometimes we don't have the mandate to deal with their disputes. We don't have, because our mandate is limited as a tribunal. And if we've got a tribunal with efficient staff who are highly professional, and we've got members who are highly skilled waiting to provide a service, I think and we've got a track record of doing that service within a short time frame, I think we need to utilize that more effectively. And the way we need to utilize it and the way Parliament can help us is to ensure that our mandate and our decision-making power is increased. When the tribunal was created, they gave us very limited jurisdiction. And I think that the jurisdiction needs to be increased, the number of cases, the type of cases we can deal with. There's no point having efficient people who are sitting there and have dealt with cases efficiently if our mandate is limited, because the tribunal's mandate needs to be increased. We need to, the new amendments coming before the tribunal, and those amendments are, some of them are essential that increase our mandate. One of it is to make mediation compulsory, which is controversial in some sense, but I think it's essential as well, because that will cut down the number of cases that goes to litigation, and will save much more cost in the long term. The state will, sometimes indirectly through legal aid costs, and the judges could be used to deal with other matters more effectively. So our targets we've been exceeding. B is also important, legal representation. 95% of our cases are lodged without legal representation. 95% without legal representation. And that means a saving for those people who are coming there without lawyers. I know in the CCMA you're not allowed lawyers in misconduct and incapacity cases, and that makes a difference to resolving disputes. Whether lawyers should be allowed or not, it's a bigger issue, a bigger academic discussion. I think there needs to be a lot of retraining there. But 95% without legal representation means the man in the street can come there for free, can form a company, and can run a business, can have the benefits of separate legal personality, which ensures that when the company is bankrupt or something goes wrong, he and his family are not bankrupt. The types of cases we deal with, just to, there's a few slides, I'm going up and down, I know, but Slide number 7, we'll look at the type of cases we deal with. About 10 of them there. I'm not going to go through each one of the cases, each one of the types of cases, but the jurisdiction is very limited at the moment. Right? And we're working on a short-term plan to increase our jurisdiction. I think there's a few amendments that are going to come before Parliament. I'm not sure where they are at the moment. And that will increase our jurisdiction in the short term. But I think in the long term, as a tribunal, we have a bigger picture of wanting to increase our jurisdiction more so that the people we have are used more effectively. Right? The number of cases we deal with, I suppose some have increased, social ethics committee, for example, name disputes have decreased, but this year is a bit lower than it was years before. And there's been some justification for that. For example, with regard to name disputes, the enforcement of it was often an issue. But I think there's new amendments that have been suggested, and are working with the CIPC. I've also tried to ensure that the enforcement of those types of disputes are more effective, so that they have meaning, you know. So at the moment we don't do many cases. We've got about 244 cases this year. But I think when the new amendments, if they go through, they'll increase the cases in the short term, and in the long term, hopefully much more cases. Because 244 is nothing. Because most of our members, despite the fact they are part-time, they're just sitting, and they're waiting for cases. And they're highly skilled, and I think they need to be utilized more effectively. The next slide is just our... just shows the turnaround times in the form of a slide, and it shows that within cases are dealt with between 90 and 100% within 30 days. Okay. I'm going to hand it to the COO to talk about the administrative aspects of it. So, okay.
Thank you, Chairperson of the Tribunal. Good morning, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. Good morning to the members, and thank you for the opportunity. I have been introduced. My name is Monica Lidimwani. The Chairperson of the Tribunal has touched on a lot of points already. Mine will be to highlight a few of the areas that are left. I'd like to take you to slide on page 10. I think it should be slide number 7. It's after slide number 7. It's after the Program 1 adjudication. It is my page number 10. It is on Program 2 administration. One of the highlights that we'd like to bring to your attention is the fact that in the past financial year, we were able to achieve all our targets except one. And that particular target was on the implementation of the case management system, which is an electronic case management system that we use both for capturing, administering, and for recording the decisions that we make that the chairperson has talked to. Now, this was running a little bit late, but we are glad to report that even though it is out of those two quarters, that we have been able to, it is out of the last year's results, we are able to report that at least in the second quarter of this year, we were able to implement that system, which makes us proud because we also just at this moment feel that we are in the fourth industrial revolution. This is where everybody is, and we were a little bit behind, so we're happy to be there. Another highlight is that we have also been able to, in the past year, pass the adjudication guidelines. Now, this might look a bit of a pedantic point, but for us it is important because, as the chairperson has just highlighted, a lot of the people that come in front of us, they come without legal representation. What does that mean? It means that they need to be guided in terms of how to submit their applications and perhaps even seeing their cases through the panelists. So these guidelines are important to make the process of submitting applications to us, which we do say a man in the street can submit it, possible. One of the highlights, the challenges that we will be highlighting to you is that we are in a state of stunted growth. The institution is not growing very well at the moment. We will talk to that at a later stage. And you might then at that point say, but what is it that you're doing in terms of making yourself known, marketing yourself, and so on. And so that number C there, under number 2 on program administration, just says that we are doing all we can. This is one of the efforts that we are taking to make sure that people know about those services that are without charge to them and that are done speedily, as the chairperson has highlighted. And because we have mentioned challenges around the workload, we fought it fit in last year to review our staff complement organizational structure. And so we reused, through the study that we did, our staff complement for a number 28 to 21. And when you look at the structure that the chairperson has already highlighted, you will see that we are not top-heavy. A lot of the people that we're having in the structure are people that are doing the work. And the last point under the administration that we'd like to highlight to you is the input that we made in terms of the amendments to the Companies Act. Again, looking at it from outside, you might think it's a small point, so what about it? But it's important to us because this is one of those amendments which, if it sees the light of day, it's going to contribute towards the expansion of our mandate. One of our challenges we've been saying, and we are going to be saying in this interaction with you, is the fact that our mandate is very limited. And this amendment that is coming, that we made an input to, is going to help us deal with that challenge. The next slide, which is entitled Key Highlights, Annual Report, Financial Management, point number 3, which should be on page 11, talks to the highlights on the financial management. Now, financial management, of course, is a specialty of our CFO who's here, and she will talk to it, but I just want to highlight a few things. That we have had no irregular expenditure in the past financial year. The three issues that were raised by the Auditor General, which were mainly administrative, when you look at your slide number 15, you will see this on page 20, and the CFO will speak to those points. All of those issues that were highly administrative have been dealt with. And for the fourth year in a row, we have managed to achieve a clean audit in the past financial year. The target for us with regards to paying suppliers is 30 days, but we're glad to report that we actually pay our suppliers within 15 days, at least 91% of them. So we don't really wait around the 30 days. We do what we can to pay them in the shortest possible period. The National Treasury has an instruction that requires us to contain costs, and that number 5 there says that we are in 100% compliance with that instruction. We have a few risks, and we have a risk register that lists about 10 top risks that we have identified in the institution, amongst which we have been referring to are the limited mandate and the limited funding. Now, those risks are identified and managed properly, except for those two. With regard to those two, we're going to say over and over that we need intervention, we need assistance, with regard to the funding issue and the mandate issue. And the mandate issue is well within the members' competence, it's a legislative matter, and we appeal for assistance. So those are the two most important risks that we are not able to manage very well, that we are asking and appealing for intervention. And of course, it goes without saying that like all other state agencies and government, we do have monitoring tools that help us to improve our performance. Our chairperson has already spoken to slide number 7, which is that list of cases that we handle. I just want to bring it to attention that the most common among them would be the name disputes and the review of compliance notices that are issued by CIPC. So there's a close working relationship and connection between us and the CIPC. And the next common one would be social and ethics committee applications. And what are these social and ethics committee applications? In accordance with Section 72 of the Act, all state-owned companies and all publicly listed companies and other companies with a public interest score of above 500 are required to establish what they call social ethics committees. These are very important committees that look after a lot of compliance issues, environmental issues, issues of empowerment, and so on. And so when companies are not able to comply with us, either because they think, because of the way they are structured, the size of their company, and so on, they may not be able to do this, and in fact it is not necessary for them to do this, or there is already in the perhaps structure of the company, perhaps it's a subsidiary of a company that already has another committee that is doing substantially similar functions. They then apply to us for an exemption. But we look very seriously at these applications because we think the purpose for which social and ethics committee is intended is very important. So not a lot of them are granted, but it is important that we handle them, because when we say to a company that we are not granting you the exemption, which we often do, the majority of our cases are in that way, we are basically saying you must now go and implement and set up a social and ethics committee. So those are the kind of applications that we are receiving. Even though the list seems long in terms of the cases that the type of cases that we handle, we're not receiving enough of them. And so one of our appeals is really that as you go back to your constituency, you talk about please the mandate of the tribunal so that we are able to get more of those cases. Chairperson, I would also like to perhaps go to the quarterly before we let the CFO come in with the numbers. Perhaps I should just finish this bit. So if you go to what should be just go to the part that starts with first and second quarter performance report. It should be on page 21 if your slides are numbered. So that's the beginning, but the slides I will begin to talk to will be on page 22. We are basically just giving you here the highlights of the first and the second quarter and all that we want to achieve with that slide in terms of our communication is that those are the number of applications that we have received in that quarter, the total on adjudication being 91 in the first quarter and 117 in the second quarter. And the other numbers are really very much self-explanatory. And perhaps the last slide I would like to talk to is the one that appears on page 23. That just shows you more of what we are doing to get known, so that even as you hear that we are headquartered in Pretoria, in fact that's the only place we are at, you do know that we travel around the country, we go to the provinces, and you will see on that slide, page number 23, that We have gone to areas such as KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, Free State, Western Cape, even though was in terms of promotion, communication, and sort of marketing, we do go as well to hear cases out into the provinces. So we don't only hear cases in Pretoria only, we go out to the provinces to hear cases. Our members go there. But we have also been working very closely with other government departments, such as the Department of Small Business, and that's how we were able to reach those areas that I just mentioned. We are on many platforms. We use multiple platforms for marketing ourselves. We use print, we use social media, we are on the web, we do face-to-face. So yes, even as we complain about the dwindling numbers, that says to you that we are not sitting there and doing nothing. I think I'd like to leave it there, Chairperson. We can perhaps leave the CFO to deal with the numbers. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'll now give it to our CFO, Ms. Irene Mitsotakis, to talk about the financial aspects of the annual report and the cost of the report.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson, and morning, honourable members and all the colleagues from the CIPC and the DTI. I will talk, I think the COO and the Chairperson already have alluded some of the financial challenges. I will try to go deeply into the financial situation for companies tribunal. On slide number 11, we've got two programs within the tribunal, and it's mainly based on the small size of an entity. We only have adjudication and administration as our two programs. And majority of our spend is on administration as a function, because that's where we have employees, as well as our operating and administrative expenses. And with about 13% of the budget going into adjudication, where we pay our members when they handle the cases. And our revenue is mainly from the grant that we receive from the DTI. We don't generate any other revenue. 74% of our revenue is mainly from the grant. And the only other revenue that we have was mainly from the interest that we've been earning on our investments that the tribunal managed to have the surplus in the earlier years when it was established. And other income basically is our income from surplus funds. We have been fortunate for Treasury to approve those surplus for us to utilize. And we've been doing that literally to augment the deficit. And the expenditure on our side, majority of our expenditure is on the compensation of employees, like as I alluded to. And other things is mainly the operational cost of running the organization. And the other bit goes to tribunal members. So those are our expenditure in a nutshell. And we also included the slide on the historical financial performance, mainly because we have not been at the committee for quite some time, and just to give a broader picture also with regard to the financial challenges. Over the past four financial years, tribunal has been operating on deficit, and we've just tried to do our best to manage with the surplus that we had, but that surplus is coming to an end in this financial year, and going forward it poses a challenge in terms of running the organization as a going concern. So, and that slide also indicates the percentage of grant increase over the years. So our grant that we receive from the DTI has also not been really increasing at the level that one would expect, and that poses a challenge, because from the legislation point of view, tribunal doesn't charge its services, and we don't have any other means also to generate funds. The issues from the Auditor General were mainly housekeeping issues. Like they've already mentioned, we have been consistently receiving a clean audit over the years. We don't have major challenges with regard to the issue of supply chain, the issue of financial management, and the performance information. We have never had anything. These were just housekeeping small issues that as management we have addressed during the audit also. They were not material to affect any finding, any major finding to the organization. And I'll also talk to the quarterly performance. The slide appears on the screen. With regard to budget spend, quarter one, the spending is normally low due to the fact that it's still beginning of the financial year. We didn't really spend much, but with quarter two, we are almost halfway through, so we are making progress in terms of spending our funds. With regard to the issue of irregular, fruitless, and wasteful, quarter one, we didn't have anything. And quarter two is only 437. It was just a minor thing, but we have to report it because it's not about quality. It's not about the materiality of the amount, but the quantitative nature of it. And the payment of suppliers, we like the COO has already alluded, I think the trend that we set within the organization is 15 days, and we are really doing well because quarter one is 85. Quarter two is 94% within 15 days. The financial performance for Q1 is mainly what I've touched on. The main thing that I think you can see even from the financial performance is our finances are really going down because you can see even from the other operating expenses, just in Q1 we were already over the budget. And it's mainly some of the unavoidable expenses that we had to pay. So that's what led to that. But however, that has been reviewed over the midterm review to see where we get, where there is a lesser spending, we do transfer funds to that area. With regard to quarter two, I've already alluded that we are still way within our budget. Yes, we anticipate a deficit, but like I said, we do augment that deficit with the surplus, which will be coming to an end, and plans are in place just to ensure that we spend well within the budget, but the issue is to address the funding going forward. I will leave it at that, and I'll hand over to the chairperson.
Okay, thank you. Just to round up some of the things that were brought up with regard to the challenges we're having and what type of assistance we may need. And I think we've brought up some of these things, the COO, the CFO. The one is the budgetary constraints, an obvious challenge because we've been relying on the surplus. And I think the second issue was a number of cases haven't been increasing as much as possible as it should be, but I think that will have to happen, that could happen through amendments to legislation to increase our mandate. So that we could do more cases. And I think in the short term, the current amendments that were made, there's a few amendments there that would help us. The one in particular was to make the mediation compulsory. And I think in the long term, at the tribunal, we've also got to look at other amendments that need to be done to increase our mandate more extensively. And I think that's a bigger project with myself and the COO and the others in the tribunal, particularly those in charge of research, which is kind of our marketing person and legal, will have to look at. So that's a limited mandate challenge that we have. And facilities was another challenge that we have. Currently, we depend on the DTI for the facilities that we have. We are only located in Pretoria, but I think we have a presence. Our CEO has said we have a footprint everywhere else. Our members go where the cases are. And but some facilities, maybe, that we don't have enough hearing rooms. We're currently trying to use what budget we get have to develop hearing rooms, but that will be at the facilities of the DTI. I'm not sure if there's anything else regarding challenges. I'll ask the CEO to add to that just now regarding the operational challenges. Is there anything else to add to the challenges before I look at the...
Thank you, Chairperson. Perhaps I could just add on the external dependencies. So what that refers to is, of course, the reliance on the DTI infrastructure that we talked about, but also the fact that we outsource the internal audit services. So we don't have an in-house internal auditor, and also IT, a lot of IT services are outsourced as a result of the shortages that we have on funding. I think that's all I'd like to add, Chair.
Okay, just to, I'll just finalize in the next 2 minutes. I think we've got to, just to talk about the tribunal, and I spoke at the beginning of what we're trying to achieve in our short, I've been there a year and a half, the CEO's been there 6 months, and we're trying to get the organization to provide a service to all South Africans, and I think the tribunal was created in order to do that. But when it was created in a very cautious way, with a very limited mandate and a very limited budget. I think we're going to make it more effective. We've got the manpower, not complete manpower, but we have committed staff there. We have members who are highly professional, and I think we need to start using them more effectively in order for us to have a greater impact. We've had an impact in ensuring that those decisions that come before us are resolved within 30 days, and we want to make sure that that extends to all South Africans and everyone who wants to invest in South Africa. Just as South Africans know the CCMA, and everyone knows the CCMA, well, nearly everyone. You know, it's a cost-effective, cheap for men on the street to go there and say, look, our labor rights are protected. We want companies to have the same. Not just the big companies who can afford litigation, but all South Africans should have the benefit of separate legal personality. You know, companies have been used in our history to hide race relations. I mean, this famous, the Dado case, for example. So we have a long history of companies, and companies are for everyone, for all South Africans. The benefit of separate legal personality should apply to everyone, especially for the small businesses which are coming up. And I think we have a role to play. CIPC has a major role to play as well, to work together with them. So from Parliament, we're asking that the amendments that come before you to increase our mandate, that one take them seriously, because there's no point having us there and not having an impact on all South Africans. We're creating an organization that's there. And also there's talk about creating other types of tribunals for cooperatives and elsewhere. Why put more money into those organizations? Why create more expense when you already have an infrastructure that can be expanded, and those people that we have as our members can do all those other cases as well, you know. So there's no point creating other organizations when you have one that's there. And particularly the mediation skills are useful. So in the short term, there'll be amendments that come before the Parliament that we want you to look at. In the long term, we're going to propose more amendments, and there may be other legislation that comes to you to create other tribunals. And when that comes to you, maybe you should think about whether that work should go to the company's tribunal that already exists, or should we now, as a state, invest money in another set of infrastructure and people when we already have limited resources. And the CEO has also said that please share who we are to your constituencies. That's important. And funding for us is important. I mean, there's various models we are looking at for funding. The one is we're going to have to depend on the DTI. The other is to look at our colleagues next door, CIPC. one way or the other, and we haven't had formal discussions with them, but we always have a good relationship with them. And one way Treasury has suggested is that informally, is that we get funding through CIPC. Either legislation needs to be amended or through an MOU. But those are bigger discussions. But funding is a big issue for us. And I know funding is an issue for all institutions that come here. Funding is an issue for the country as a whole. But from the beginning, we were underfunded. You know, and from the beginning, we're depending on a surplus. Thank you very much for hearing us out. Thank the CEO and the CFO for coming here. Thank you for the invitation. And we welcome your questions. Sorry we've gone too long, but thank you very much.
No, I think from what the chair is saying, say that not having good relationship might be very expensive. So we hear you. And maybe what we actually can ask the honorable members to comment and or ask questions. I think the key issues that actually have come up was around the issue of funding and mandate, from what I understood. But there's also a point which I think we may have to get you to help us understand clearly, why is it important to have good relations? And why is it an issue that will actually add value for ourselves to actually support mediation than actually having the processes where we have legal processes and actually waste a lot of money through legal representation in terms of actually relations that are conflictual? Can I actually ask the members of the committee for comments and or clarity questions, if there are any? Mulder? Mutaum? Mboyane? And Mantashe? Okay, in that order. Mulder?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I just want to know, as far as percentage or number of cases concerned that had to be turned away because it was out of the jurisdiction or it failed, is that it need not to be an exact number, but I suppose it's a rather large number of cases. You can just give you an indication of that. And I wanted to ask something, but that the doctor actually answered my question, sort of. Why was companies chosen originally, or the mandate only to be companies? What need to be done to expand the mandate to include those corporations and cooperatives? And then also I want to know, is the mandate to facilitate between companies, company to company, in other words, a natural person or a non-legal entity, in other words, won't be able to make use of this facility. And then I would also like to give my support to the appeal to extend. As far as costs are concerned, we all know the financial constraints of the government and the department. But what I want to know is, once two parties decide to make use of this facility, do they also agree to that they have to abide by the outcome? And especially where there is a financial implication for a company, isn't it possible to earn a percentage on a pro bono or on a contingency basis? Thank you, Chair.
Mutau.
Let me welcome the presentation from the company tribunals. I have only a few questions. One, I think the Competition Tribunal, they must improve on public education and awareness so that the small businesses can be aware what it is that they are doing. Secondly, page 7. According to your report, the nature of cases, name dispute is the highest for different financial aid. Don't you think the relationship with CIPC, it can assist you to reduce the high rate of name dispute cases? I don't know, maybe the relationship in terms of the systems that we are using, it can help some way. The third question, page 27, CFO, irregular and fruitless expenditure. 437. Why? It's very little. I suppose it can be avoided. The last one, your organogram. The vacant post in the supply chain. I think it's a very critical position. It must be prioritized, otherwise we'll have many challenges and many disputes on the supply chain processes. According to your report, we can hear you have financial challenges, but in legal services, to have a vacant post, no, to have a legal advisor that report directly to the COO, it must be also avoided. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Mulder has covered me on some items because I wanted, I so wish that the tribunal could at least dwell much and explain to us what is contained in the amendments that you are contemplating so that we can understand which type of cases are we talking about. That you think you need your scope to be extended to. But we appreciate the professionalism that you run the tribunal with so far, with the little funding that we have. But Chairperson, as a comment, I just want to raise my concern that this is the second entity of the DTI that is threatening to have funds depleted by the end of the financial year. And I don't know what that means or where does that take us to. But General Chairperson, the performance is applauded and we I don't know where they're going to get the funding. That's my biggest problem. We appreciate what they do so far. But I wonder, I wish they could at least expand just a helicopter, you know, I don't know how to call it. My English is not my first language. What is it? What type of cases do you think you need your scope to extend it to? Just a helicopter. Kobi Sawuti, don't hang a lady from a cinema singer and the answer is me. I'm sorry, I'm not well today.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Welcome the presentation. But also there are a few clarity seeking questions. One will be Honorable Matash has already alluded to the issue of legislation. What is it exactly that you want this committee to assist with in terms of legislation? As you know, this is our mandate as well as policy makers. So can you assist us, even if you are not ready now, can you in a written response be able to write down and say what is it that you want us to assist with in terms of the legislation to amend it moving forward? And also elaborate further, because you raised issues of challenges here. One which is the facility. Said facility is a challenge. And our understanding that you are housed in the CIPC or in the DTI somewhere around there. So we must understand exactly what is the role of the DTI in terms of your housing, because seemingly they are not providing enough capacity or financial capacity in terms of assisting you. But also, I think in terms of the cases, why you don't have much cases, because even CIPC is dealing with same cases, because if people register a company, they are able to detect as to whether this company is already existing in the registration. So to me, I don't know whether that is not a duplication or we need to separate the responsibility, because one of the mandate of the CIPC is to register those companies and also not to double register names of companies. So I think, and also share, I'm not so sure in terms of the awareness, how are you doing with your awareness? And also we are told here that as much as you don't have enough financial capacity, but you are able to outsource some of your responsibilities. So I don't know how are you going to deal with that. So if you are outsourcing, that means you've got a lot of things in your hand, and these ones you're giving to others because you've got a lot in your plate. For instance, the auditing part, I don't know, aren't you able to deal with auditing within the company to have your internal audit? Then the AG will take the other part. But if you outsource the auditing, internal auditing, and also the AG is taking the other part, that means somehow we, and also the IT system, said is outsourced, aren't you able to deal with it? If you take those resources that you pay outside, you hire the manager, ITC, that is vacant, it's not going to be proper at least to minimize the expenditure. We are very much happy that you are able to deal with disputes, resolve it within 30 days. Unlike CCMA, it takes 5-6 years to deal with the dispute. And also like the DTI to come now and tell us what is it that they are doing in terms of assisting you. Because really you need the assistance from the DTI. Even if it's not in terms of whether financial or so, but what is it that they are doing to because you raise a lot of challenges, even a parking space. If you don't have a parking space in terms of facility, the DDI has got the offices, can house you. As much as you don't have a revenue generation, what do you think it can be a proposed revenue generation on your side? Because really you must also have such proposal to say, in the future, we cannot depend on DTI's grant, but this is what we propose that at least that we can do. Because really, you're doing a good job. Maybe last, you're talking of suppliers that you're paying within 15 days. Who are those suppliers? Who are you doing business with? Thank you very much. Thank you.
Can we then, I was looking at my watch, saying, okay, fine. Let's actually maybe take the comments from the tribunal leadership. Okay, Chen.
I think I'll start with some of the answers, and then the COO will come in, and then the CFO with some of the difficult questions. Who are we paying within 15 days? I think the first one was from the chair. Why we need good relations and why mediation? And I think good relations applies to different aspects. I think amongst different entities, we need good relations. For example, ourselves, CIPC, the BE Commission, and the others who deal with company issues. I think a lot of our staff interchange. While the CIPC deals with legislating name disputes, we deal with if there's a conflict or if someone else has used the same name, they make an application to us to do that. So somehow or another we have to have a relationship with the CIPC because we in a sense an appeal body for some of the matters that come to them. And there are ways to improve that relationship, and I think one of the comments was to have a system that works together. The theoretical arguments against that, should they be making decisions on what's similar or should a neutral body be doing that like us? But I hear what you're saying. We've got our case management system and maybe there's ways for us to improve it and get greater links, but that's something one could look at in the future. So relations and also the BEE Commission has to have relations with us. We have cases come before us with fronting, for example. That's a big issue. So we need to have a relationship with them to figure out how to deal with fronting effectively. Do we say this company is doing unlawfully? How do we deal with it in a civil matter or a criminal matter? Some of it falls outside our jurisdiction as well. So those types of relationships are important between entities and government departments, I think. Maintaining relationships amongst companies themselves or within companies, I think, is important for the economy of the country. If we're able to mediate a dispute between directors in the company, I think that's and ensure that the company is able to function. It may be feeding those directors, their families, their employees, and I think those relationships are important. And litigation destroys relationships. Mediation doesn't only look at the law; it looks at what's really worrying someone. Maybe from directors, it may be a personal issue. It may not always be about the law. The law is not everything. Sometimes it's a different issue that concerns people. And I think as South Africans, we saw the value of working together. And in a sense, Parliament is people working together, I would hope. and that's the idea of getting people to talk and to resolve disputes. And with regard to the question that came about our jurisdiction being limited, I think we had a slide showing the types of cases we deal with. They're very limited. Slide number 7. I don't know the exact number of cases that come that we don't have jurisdiction. I think it's quite difficult to have. But there's some very sad cases that come. We were trying to help small businesses, owner driver associations, for example, where what some employers have done is they've converted their drivers. They said, you're no longer working for us, you own your your vehicle, and you are now an independent contractor, and you do the driving. And you'll see a lot of those guys, so-called Black Friday, you see them driving things and delivering things from internet purchases and other purchases. And one very seldom thinks about those guys, because they don't know the value of being employees, and they are disposable to those to a lot of companies, because there's so many of them that can replace that they can replace each other. And we've had them come to us to say, look, we need help because we're not employees in terms of the LRA and the bargaining council agreements. We're small businesses. We were forced to form owner driver associations, either in terms of companies or in the private capacity. And we can't help them because we don't have jurisdiction. Our jurisdiction is limited on these particular cases, which is quite sad, because if those guys don't get paid, for example, some of them may not get paid for a few months, they close shop, or if they don't heed to what the contract, what the contractor tells them to do, they lose their contracts. So that's just one example. And we've been trying to help, even though it doesn't follow our mandate, we've been trying to help them. I've been calling the bargaining council to speak to people, but there's lots of agreements that exclude us from helping, and also there's no real help we could provide them. I mean, if our mandate was increased to deal with those contractual disputes, to assist small businesses, to assist other cooperatives, then we could help them, you know. And it's sad that they don't have, I mean, what do? They can't, they're not employees, they can't go to the bargaining council. The only recourse is to go to litigation. And litigation, and an owner driver is not going to afford a lawyer. You know, he's not going to qualify for legal aid because he gets paid. He's earning a small income, so he falls within that missing middle, which a lot of South Africans fall into, unfortunately. So the number and the types of cases are limited, and I think the potential is great, but obviously it needs a funding. Let's see a few. I think the CONM will come in as well, but improving education and awareness. I think our CEO has spoken about education and awareness. Who are we educating? Where do we create awareness? Are we going to the man in the street who doesn't have a company so he can have a company? There's also other education that has to be done by the other tribunals, CIPC, and others dealing with companies to make people aware of companies. We do go to those institutions. We do go to people who are less fortunate. I think our marketing person has traveled throughout the country. But we also have to market to the gatekeepers of conflict resolution as well, which is the lawyers. So we do go to the law societies. And we do try and work with organizations where we can get excellent expertise at the margin of the cost, and sometimes for free. I mean, I work at a university, and last year we had one with a conference at the Mandela Institute, which is part of Wits University. And yesterday we had a meeting, because we came for this meeting, I think the CEO and our marketing person suggested we go to UCT. So we save costs, and then we try to arrange a conference with them. So they provide the venues, and they also have a database that can talk to business people, attorneys, who are also, in some sense, represent companies and can use us more effectively. So I think there is education and awareness is essential. And also what we've noticed in working at Wits and also talking to the company law expertise, they don't teach companies tribunals as part of company law. Maybe they've got too much to teach in part of their curriculum, so the idea is to change the curriculum as well. So, I mean, I've been speaking to the company law experts at Wits, and also at UCT, we offered to give guest lectures there. Some of our members, a gentleman in Cape Town at the moment, he's been giving talks in a number of different types of conferences on the company's side, you know. So the idea of creating awareness is at different levels, trying to utilize different expertise. Academic institutions are valuable. Radio, social media, and I think the CEO has spoken about improving other education awareness. But we've got to do more. We've got to do more. And sometimes we've got to do it at the very lowest level. As I said, And at the law school, most of our courses are dedicated towards litigation. We teach people how to litigate. We've got one course in ADR, and that's a struggle. And slowly, slowly, we're trying to introduce that in other courses. Family law should teach ADR, labor law teaches a little bit, the company law needs to teach that. So we need to change the way in which we deal with conflict from a grassroots level. And sometimes we've got to teach people to unlearn certain things, which is a bit more difficult, especially those already in the profession. So education is for mediation, it's a huge thing. It's not only creating awareness on the tribunal. It's saying, look, mediation is not a soft way of resolving disputes. In fact, mediation is more difficult. It's easy to scream and shout and go to court. It's harder to say, let's sit and talk. So that's what we're trying to do. Name disputes. I know someone said we should work with CIPC in dealing with name disputes, but they register it and we see whether or not there's a conflict in names. Maybe they can talk a bit about that when they talk, but I think it's a separate function. But I think we take the point that maybe there's ways to do things better in the long term. Maybe the systems should speak to each other. But again, the person registering the name, I don't know even how they necessarily do it. May not necessarily have the expertise as a member who looks at whether some name is similar is not an easy thing. Sometimes they may be obvious, but a lot of times they're not. A lot of times they've got a history, and a lot of times you've got to look at the evidence. So it's sometimes a bit more complicated than, because you've got to look at the wording of the act, interpret it and apply it. And if an administrator is doing it at that level of registering, you may not have that expertise there. So I think there's a bit more complexities there. But I think it's something one could look at. I'm going to leave it to the CEO to talk about things that I may have. I probably left out a few questions, and some of it may be more administrative, and then the CFO will come in with the financial issues. Yeah?
Thank you, Chairperson of the Tribunal. Thank you, Chair. I think I'll speak more on the mandate expansion, which is one of the points that I'm really passionate about. I think it was raised. Honorable Mantashe, you said, you know, if we were to write to you, what would we say about this mandate expansion? Perhaps let me just start by saying, why is it that we say that our mandate is limited? Just briefly, we are established within the Companies Act. So our mandate is only to deal with company-related matters. And even within the company law, the Companies Act, we are very limited in that when it comes to disputes, for example, within companies, we can only deal with them where there are only two directors involved. And a lot of the companies have more than two directors. So the moment it is like that, it falls outside our scope. The appropriate dispute resolution is also discretionary. It's not compulsory. So these are some of the limitations that we have within the Companies Act. Now, where do we see scope in terms of expansion of our mandate? We do know that there are a lot more disputes within companies that we can deal with. There will be, for example, contract-related disputes that the chair has alluded to, for example. Why can't we deal with those so long as they emanate within companies? There is a whole issue around dispute resolution. A lot of companies are struggling, and these are the companies that we can also help to mediate and resolve their disputes when it comes to the challenges they are encountering. And also, there are disputes within cooperatives we could be given through another legislation, not only the Companies Act, the mandate to deal with disputes arising from cooperatives. There are also companies that are neither cooperatives or companies or what did you call those, the other entities that have been discontinued now, close corporations. There are companies that operate outside any of those entities that are just small businesses. why can't we deal with disputes within small businesses as well? Let me be controversial and even say, why can't we deal with issues of unpaid claims of small businesses where government is not able to pay these businesses? There are so many of those. We're doing well. Even if we say so ourselves within the company tribunal, we've already said to you that we pay at least 91% of our suppliers, and we leave the difficult questions to the CFO to say who are the suppliers. But we pay them within 15 days. Only a small percentage of them, we pay them within 30 days. We do know that there are not other government entities that are not so lucky, perhaps because of other challenges that they have, that are not paying within that period. There is a whole outcry out there with regard to businesses that are struggling, that are not paid either within 30 days or not paid at all. Why can't we deal with those cases? These are some of the areas that our mandate can be expanded to. The Act already says that we are empowered to deal with company-related disputes through adjudication and arbitration, and that we can deal with any other disputes that we may be empowered to deal with. And this is where more legislation can give us more power. There is the whole BEE legislation, for example, that can also empower us to do more of those, because we do know there are shareholding disputes there. People are fighting. They put in a 1% today, and tomorrow they take that person out. We can deal with those kind of things. And this is where we see the scope for us, so that with this infrastructure that the chairperson has already talked about, they already set up staff, the members that are there, the offices and other infrastructure that we have, we can use it to deal with the problems that are besetting the country at the moment. So this is an issue that we are really passionate about. What is it that is in the current amendment? In the current amendment, as far as at least the expansion of the mandate is concerned, it's only making ADR, appropriate dispute resolution, compulsory. So it's not going to be optional. And that's really a limited expansion that we have. We would have liked more. We would have liked to deal with companies that have more than two directors. We would have liked to deal with reservation of, to have ADR reserved only for the company's tribunal. So these are some of the suggestions that we made that were taken out of the current amendments. We're hoping that they'll come with another amendment for more extensive amendments that we've been promised. And I think, Chair, you've answered a lot of the questions. We have noted, I think, the concerns, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, around the vacancies that we have, and we will just say we will try our best to implement those. The challenge is really around finances, but we would like to fill these positions like yesterday, if we have the money. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I'll just touch on the last one that talked to finances, the issue of a why fruitless expenditure. I think the controls are there. The fact that we only have 437, it does say a lot to say there are controls, but yes, we work with people, and there's just some few things here and there. So this was just an oversight where there was a duplication of printing that we incurred, but the controls are there. We are monitoring. It's not something that we normally have, and there are consequences for that. So that money, we have the employees paying it back. And with regard to vacant post in SCM, we acknowledge to say that's a critical post. However, given the funding, there were other critical posts that were also earmarked, and those were funded. We are doing with the current staff that we have to ensure that we've got proper segregation of duties. So the controls are there with the current staff. And we do get interns each and every year that we train within supply chain, just to also assist with the administrative process of supply chain management. And the other issue as to who are the suppliers, These are the suppliers that we do business with on a day-to-day basis. Whatever that we procure, be it transcripts for when we have hearings, be it catering, all normal day-to-day suppliers. Those are the suppliers that we are referring to. We do pay them quite well on time. Thank you. I think those were the questions.
Well, I think what we will try and do, which is actually quite good, is that there is also a space or gap, for lack of a better term, where references have been made in terms of the DTI, the CIPC, even small business, in a sense of one won't speak to Monday, but I think it's just a point of synergy that is actually quite possible in terms of actually the gap of space, even if we speak to issue of mandate or funding. So I think that might be one issue we may have to look at. But I'm just thinking that unless maybe there are any comments from the committee members, one would actually like us, we would say we will take the next briefing and we won't actually chase you away. You can stay and then we can be able to actually see how we take the processes forward. But mainly through our secretariat, we will look at the questions or comments that were made just to make a follow-up so that we get something in writing so that we can be able to follow through as a committee. Yeah. Okay. So maybe can we then agree that we it looks like tea is ready. So we can take a break while the next presentation gets ready. So we can actually get some refreshments. I think tea might be ready at the door. Chairperson, maybe you have rounding up issues.
Sorry, I don't want to take up your time. Are you saying we must wait or can we be excused to do other work and then?
Well, I'm just saying it's your choice. If you can, we have no problem. We'd appreciate that. If you are unable to, that's understood.
And unfortunately,
yeah.
I want to do some other work and then
catch
our flight. So just say thank you very much to all of you for giving us the time. And we really appreciate you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Oh, William.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think also this thing of leaving is a challenge. It shows that there's no working relationship. Because you see, now the CIPC is coming for presentation. Some of the issues that they raise are linked with the ICT.
Okay.
And they still have to link even in terms of the ICT so that they communicate. Now, I browse here, I can see this company tribunal, but there's no clarity in terms of what the mandates are and stuff. So, also the ICT can be able to assist them, the CIPC, because they have a mobile app, they have every sort of technology that you can talk of, but doesn't talk to the company tribunal. So, it's proper, but for nowadays, they can leave Chair because they have some business to do. But moving forward, I think they must have this working relation so that they've always been together because seemingly they are doing one and another thing.
Well, I called it synergy. He's calling it cooperation. I think we're actually saying the same thing. But thanks for that, Mbuya. But can we actually take just a 7 minutes break? Then we can actually take the next briefing. Thank you. Let me just work from our kindly take us through your presentation. Good morning and welcome.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to yourself and to all the members. Thank you for a warm welcome. It really is a pleasure for myself and my team to present the 18-19 annual report, quarter one and quarter two performance of the CIPC. My delegation this morning will consist of myself. To my right is Mr. Lungile Dukwana. He's my head of strategy at the CIPC. To my close left, my short left, is my CFO, Mr. Mohammed Jassat. And to the far left of myself is Ms. Patabila Kapuma, who is the head of governance, risk, and compliance. We will be sharing the presentation based on certain parts of it. I will be the first one to do part of the annual report, and thereafter we'll deal with the matrices and the financial performance of the CIPC over the period, as well as over the quarters for which we've done. I must start off by saying that it's a fairly lengthy presentation. I think it's about 74, 75 pages. I will go through it as efficiently as possible. We won't labor every single slide. But the one thing I must start off with, which is a bad note, I must start off with an apology. And the apology is that the pages are not marked, are not numbered. So that's a little bit of editorial oversight, so please forgive me, members, regarding that, but we'll try and find a way as we go through it. I think I've touched on this, exactly what the presentation will entail, and we'll just dive right into what it is. The first part of it is that I want to do a couple of key highlights over the 18-19 financial year. And the first highlight is that CIPC continues to be quite a well-governed institution. You know, we had a history and a historical context of Cipro, where we had lots of massive findings. We were basically an organization that was not performing as we should have done. But since then, in the last 3 years, we've received a clean audit opinion from the Auditor General. We have had no material misstatements in our last financial, got no irregular expenditure, and we really pride ourselves on being quite good governed, as well as strict compliance, coupled with our performance. As you know, that the Auditor General also audits the performance of the organization, and we seem to have been doing quite well as far as that is concerned, in a sense that we met 100% of our APP targets in the last financial year. One of the other big highlights is that we also pride ourselves on being a highly automated, highly innovative organization. We not only an administrator of the pieces of legislation for which we administer, but we're also a regulator, and we try and improve on our regulatory capacity and performance. And the one thing that we launched last year was something called XBRL, which stands for Extensible Business Reporting Language. It's basically trying to increase the standardized business reporting framework and landscape and environment of South Africa, and in order for us to be able to compare apples with apples when it comes to financial reporting of companies. This was a process which was launched by the previous minister, Minister Rock Davies, and we've seen quite a good uptake as far as it's concerned. To date, we received probably just under 16,000, or if not more as of today, filings of annual financial statements in XBRL. We're seeing a steady increase month on month, and basically it has improved the compliance network and the compliance framework when it comes to how companies report on their financials, as well as other information that we include in the taxonomy of XBRL to the CIPC. Company registrations, we continue to improve on that. We have an average of 1 day turnaround time, but I have to say that it's far less than that. We actually do company registrations in minutes these days. Last night, when I arrived in Cape Town, I received a couple of messages that were on Twitter and on Facebook, and it was clients talking amongst themselves and customers, and one was saying basically they had one done in 30 minutes, one was saying they done one in 45 minutes. So we try to improve on that. The one thing that I've tried to instill in my staff is that year on year we need to improve on our performance in terms of matrices, because our clients and the people of South Africa demand that. As more young people come into the market, they want instantaneous, almost gratification, if I can call it that, when it comes to service delivery. And we try to instill that culture within the staff, and therefore we see that coming through in our registration of companies, for which we're mainly known for. But we do lots of other things in the organization. The one aspect that we're also moving towards is substantial search and examination of patents. This is something that we will discuss also going forward in terms of what we require from Parliament to try to assist us. As an organization, we took our first batch of examiners on for about 3 years now to train them up. We've taken on a second batch of interns and basically we want to see the legislative process unfold so that we're able to deal with the issue of certificates of examination patents going forward and continue to do so. One might know in terms of this portfolio committee that a decision was taken by Cabinet that in terms of the IP policy that substantive examination is but the first phase. There are two phases that are contained within the policy, and therefore we as an organization and implementation agency are gearing up very well in order for us to deal with that aspect. We also held a very large conference. It was the first time it was ever held in Africa, which was Respect for IP, going from the tip of Africa, which is a global conference on basically IP enforcement. There was approximately between 500 and 600 delegates which were present from all over the globe. It was a conference that was held in conjunction with CIPC, the World Intellectual Property Organization, the World Customs Organization, Interpol, and the World Trade Organization. We are pleased that the keynote speaker was present. I don't see her anymore, Madam Fox, as far as that is concerned. And therefore, we're quite proud of the fact that we're able to pull off such a large conference of that nature. CIPC also introduced mobile app technology. We realize that more and more people, like we ourselves do, spend lots of time on our cell phones, and therefore we should have the services also available on the cell phone. So we've started the first phase. We've got multiple phases of the mobile app technology. We started off with annual returns, customer registrations, password resets, for example, and now we're moving into full registration of companies with no human intervention. You'll be able to register companies fairly, fairly quickly on the app, and basically we're really proud of the fact that CIPC continues to innovate and automate and digitize on its services going forward. Because that's exactly what the people of South Africa want. With that comes a lot of IT infrastructure issues. We also continue to migrate onto newer systems from legacy systems. We have a historic in the terms that if you want to migrate and you want to do new and fancy things, as my IT staff like to tell me, that they like to play around with these things, that you have to have the latest of technology. But that comes with a risk. We did a lot of migration this year. We had a couple of outages that occurred. We immediately see it on social media because you've got a big social media presence, which I will come to there. But assist us as an organization. We like to hear what our clients are saying about us because it helps us to respond accordingly. We do not shy away from it, and therefore we want to be at the front line of that service delivery. So we did a lot of migrations, and that was a big highlight for us in terms of moving to newer infrastructure as we go along. The big program that we had in our APP was service delivery and access, multi-channel approach that we like to have. We like to offer our clients multiple ways of communicating with us, multiple ways of interacting with us, and multiple ways of making applications to us. So the first one is service delivery and access. The second one is innovation and creativity. That is basically intellectual property and what we're doing in the space of patents and designs. And the last one is business regulation, which is companies, co-ops. We've also included enforcement and investigations, as well as trademarks in that particular program. We like to say that we also like to enhance some of our access points to our clients, and therefore that's the reason why we have this multi-channel approach going forward. And we also like to think that when it comes to the issue of activity in the investigation area, based on business regulation and reputation, we like to see ourselves as a fully fledged regulator, not as an administrator of some of the laws for which we administer, and that is the reason why we have been in the media a lot. We have an example for areas around dealing with Steinhoff, and I've been to Parliament in this very room a few times. Areas around, we're currently investigating, for example, Tongod Sugar. We're looking at SABC. We looked at SAA, as you know. We looked at the PIC and AO. So we like to see ourselves as a credible regulator, and that speaks to the reputation of us as an organization as far as the work that we try and do. The first part of access I want to touch on is the call center. The call center for many, many years, and some members of the committee who have been here for a long time will know that this has also been a pain in our side for a long time. We go up and we go down, depending on what we deliver, what processes we put out, what projects we have. But I think that we've been doing fairly okay as far as the call center is concerned. We have seen a spike in the last part of the year, last 2 months of the year, because of the new processes, for example, XPR have been launched, the financial aspects of how do people relate to us, as well as investigations and the new processes that we put out there. There has been a drastic increase, but what also is good for us when we receive the spike in calls is that it makes us focus as an organization to the areas that the clients are wanting to interact with us. So we internally and internalize it, we meet a project team, and we basically see what is causing the influx, how do we address the influx, and what projects that we need to put in place as to why we can alleviate some of the calls coming to us. So we, as an organization, use it as a frontline mechanism. We look at how we can improve as an organization, and therefore we need to see our call center as part of our service-related channel. I must say our call center is not where it should be. I must put it there. We need to have more call center agents. We need to benchmark on our call center better. We need to look at organizations that use their call center more effectively. We need to use new technology. We put out a new tender now for new call center technology in order for us to improve on that service. But it is something that we're actively working on to make things better. Some months are better than others, but at the end of the day, we are not at the delivery that I wanted to be at, and therefore we will improve on the service as far as the call center is concerned. Most of the calls that we receive are relating to some of the top five reasons is mainly in the company space. You hardly see people calling us a lot for IP, because IP is such a specialized area. But e-services, what happens to your portal, why does it go down, etc. How do I access, why do I not access, annual returns, when do I lodge, why are you putting me in deregistration, etc., etc., etc. So, as I said, it also helps us to focus and helps us as an organization to assist those clients who do call into our call center. The other part of our delivery is a query resolution system. We have an online, we have an automated query resolution system. These are some of the top reasons why the calls are being made. One is the big one that we try to tackle is the allocation of funds. We have a system where clients deposit monies and then utilize that. But we move to a card system now, which is a card and card system, where you can utilize your credit cards, your debit cards online, and therefore we've alleviated some of these pressures that come forward. At a certain point in time, myself and the CFO have been discussing, we have to stop the allocation of funds process, only using the card system, which is a one-to-one system, basically, but having access points for people to utilize other mechanisms to try and get the services that we require, fee paying. The highest volumes of queries you can also see is obviously company registrations. It's a massive amount of work that we do, and therefore we always have a lot of queries regarding that. As to where it is, how far it's going to take, and how long it's going to take, what is stopped it, why have been rejected, etc., etc. The CIPC has a very large social media presence. We do not shy away from this. Many, many years ago, when we had a debate as to should we go to social media space, there was what are people going to say about us, are people going to bash us on Facebook, etc., etc. But we said that's right, that's exactly what it should be. Because at the end of the day, we get to know what clients are thinking about the organization, we get to know what they are having issues with, or even if they receive good service. I must say that it's quite balanced these days. We do have people who complain, but we equally have people who think the organization is doing fairly, fairly well. And it comes through in terms of our Facebook account, our Twitter account, our Instagram accounts, and all these other ones. Some of them I don't even know because some of them are more tech-savvy than I am. But we basically are on all of these. So we use our social media also to respond to clients and to queries. We have teams that deal with it in the organization. If you have the time, you can go onto the CIPC Facebook and you'll be able to see exactly what clients are saying about us. And basically, it is quite positive as far as that is concerned. We had a couple of issues recently where we had power outages in Pretoria. The whole system went down for quite a long period of time. The UPS, the limited power supply, or the DTI did not kick in, and we basically went offline for a bit. So we use these to communicate with our clients and basically to understand exactly where the hotspots are in the organization. The second program highlights is the issue of innovation and creativity. The good part that I want to highlight is that if you look at the historic graph that we have, and table that we have, is that you will see that there has been a spike in local applications. This is actually a very good thing. It shows that there is a culture that's building in South Africa of innovation and inventiveness. As you can see, that last year was 683, the last financial year it spiked by 1,100, which is quite a big spike. A lot of it can be attributed to some of the technologies coming through in the fourth industrial revolution space, and therefore we are quite proud of the fact that there are patents coming through by local South Africans as regards the fact that they are using the patenting system in order to protect their inventions. So that is something that we're going to continue to do in our education and awareness space. We go out and speak about patents. I just, for example, was a day or two ago at the summer school where we had a lot of South Africans there that we did in Bloemfontein. We spoke about the patenting system, the protection mechanism of patents, and we have students, for example, at the summer school from all over Africa. So therefore, we are quite proud of the fact that we're seeing this increase in the use of the patent system. However, there was a decrease overall as far as patents is concerned. There was a decrease on the international stage, and therefore you will see the number that reduced in the 18-19 financial year. As far as designs is concerned, designs is something that never drastically increases. It doesn't sway a lot. It doesn't go up or down. It stays consistently within the 2000 range. Always question why, how can it always be the case that approximately 2,000 get launched on an annual basis in terms of industrial designs, but that is the type of activity that we see as far as designs is concerned. It's never massive swings and never massive amounts, and therefore they get registered fairly quickly because of the volume that we see. The other area that we play a meaningful role in is in the collecting society space. Committee members who were part of the previous committee when they dealt with the issue around collective societies and intellectual property and the Copyright Amendment Bill will know that this was a highly contentious area. It was an area that we had a lot of debate around. It is an area where that we felt as a CIPC we needed more regulatory power in order to deal with collective societies because of the emotional aspect of the collection of royalties and the distribution of royalties. I'm glad to say that in 2018 we approved the distribution plan for IMPRA. They are actively distributing those particular, according to that particular plan, and in September 2017. I should mention that we are not too pleased with the distribution of IMPRA. They received quite a bit of money from the SABC, but they have failed to distribute effectively. They've only distributed 38% of what they received, and it's a lot and lots and lots of millions. So as I am sitting here, I know that my team contacted me this morning also to say that there's a letter that I need to sign, putting IMPRA on terms to say that they need to speed up the distribution of royalties to artists, and basically we will see a lot of oversight as far as that is concerned. We will put them on terms, and we will deal with them accordingly in order for them to deal with it. There's mechanisms that we can do. We can deregister them. Alternatively, we can take them to court to force them to comply with the current legislation that we have. As far as the Copyright Amendment Bill is concerned, I think I touched on it now. We've been a key part of the drafting team together with the DTI and others. You all know that this has now been passed by the House, two Houses of Parliament, sitting with the Presidency, but we know that there are issues around it. But we continue to play an active role to try and understand exactly how we can deal with it. But we also must mention that as an implementation agency, we are, and as part of the drafting team, we understand what went into the legislation, but we also understand what we need to do as an organization to be ready for when this legislation is eventually passed, if passed. We, for example, is a company's tribunal work, a copyright tribunal that finds itself into the piece of legislation, and we will actively work towards getting that done because in terms of the legislation, we will be administering that piece of work. So we play an active role in the last year as far as the amendment is concerned. As far as program 3 is business regulation and reputation, the number of companies are increasing year on year, as you can see. We've done just under 400,000 last year, which is a massive amount of companies, with an average of a one day, if not less, turnaround time for approximately 95%. The majority of companies that get registered in South Africa is by far and large private companies, smaller 1, 2, 3, not maximum of 5 persons who start a company, and those get registered fairly quickly. As I said, we have multiple channels. You can go onto our e-services website, you can walk into a bank, you can go into our self-service centers, you can now use mobile app technology, and we'll speak about something also going forward. We can use the BIS portal, and therefore we have multiple ways that one can register companies. So we've seen the huge size as far as this is concerned by our various channels, and also year and year we see the spike. I'm sure this year we're probably going to do a similar number, if not more, based on the trajectory that we've seen for the last 3 years, if not more, in the sense that it goes year on year and increases accordingly. I should mention that it also speaks to our education and awareness activity. We go the length and breadth of South Africa to speak about companies and how to maintain them, how to register them, how to regulate them. I have teams that go out and speak to every province, every area. We play an active role in the program of the Department of Trade Industry, who has an active education and awareness campaigns together with the Department of Small Business, and therefore we form part of those teams when we go out and speak about company registrations. Business Rescue, this is some statistics for all the years that we've been involved in Business Rescue. I won't go through every single one of them, but just to say that we also started to see a decrease in the number of Business Rescue in the last year. It was a spike in the beginning, but now we're starting to see it stabilize, as it were. CIPC plays a significant role, not only in the receiving of the application to place a company in rescue, but also we are actively more involved in the licensing of Business Rescue practitioners. That is the part that we play a more substantive role in terms of what we do, because we have rules and regulations that apply as far as that is concerned. We also have a business rescue forum that we put together, comprising of banks and academia and business rescue practitioners and law firms and accountants. We meet on a quarterly basis and we basically thrash out exactly how business rescue is working and the areas that we need to improve on. There's a couple of amendments that will come through in terms of the Companies Amendment Bill that speaks directly also to the business rescue area in terms of that. As far as cooperatives is concerned, year on year we see a decrease in the number of cooperatives. Once again, we saw a decrease of approximately 450 to 500 in terms of an annual basis. We must say that this we see every year. It's starting to become a trend. A couple of years ago, there were incentive schemes that were given in the provinces of cooperatives, and we saw a massive increase in cooperatives. But when that was stopped, and those incentives were stopped for the registration of cooperatives, we're starting to see the numbers trickle down year on year. We must say as an organization, we do go out and speak about cooperatives as part of our education and awareness activities. We go to every part. We also recently are introducing automation efficiencies as far as cooperative registration is concerned. You'll be able to go online by using the CATRA system, and therefore cooperatives is something that we continue to monitor, we continue to speak about, we continue to promote, we continue to educate and make people aware. But also you must understand that part of the mandate has been given to the Department of Small Business. They're responsible for the policy around it. Chairperson will know regarding that. And therefore, we also work very closely with the Department of Small Business as far as promoting that is concerned. As far as trademarks is concerned, I'm happy to report that once again we had a bumper year for trademarks. There was an increase in the number of trademarks, as you can see from the trajectory and the previous years. We did 39,136 as far as the financial year is concerned. But I must say that there currently is a downward trend towards trademark registrations in the current year. It always is an indication of the lowering of economic activity. If you look at the table and you see the 2008 to 2009 year, which was one of the only years where trademarks went down, you will know that those were recessionary years. We are seeing exactly the same trend now coming through with trademarks. I think that we are going to have a decrease in the number and the volumes of trademarks this year, based on what we're currently seeing. We're not going to make the 39,000 or more that we've been seeing over the years. And this is something that has not happened in the last 10 years. So it definitely is an indicator. Less trademarks are registered. It means that economic activity is either slowing or there is certainly some issues around that. So we continue to watch it. We continue to promote it, but we continue to report on those particular numbers. I should mention that we're also quite involved in what is called the Madrid Protocol in trademarks, which is the international filing system as by the World Intellectual Property Organization. We're also gearing up towards that. Our systems are currently being developed in order for us to receive those filings. We also dealt with guidelines and the legislation which allows us to receive international filing of trademarks. But once again, it is dependent on the parliamentary process. There is an amendment that is required in terms of the Trademarks Act, but there's also a requirement for Parliament and Cabinet to pronounce on the accession to the Trademarks Treaty regarding the Madrid Protocol. So that is something that will also require assistance from Parliament going forward. When it comes to the issue around enforcement and investigations, you will see that we received a lot of reports about irregularities. We go into fully-fledged investigations. This is some of the companies, but we receive many of them. We probably have more than a couple of hundred investigations that we do, from large to small, depending on the size of the company. We, for example, took on AO Technology in the last year. It was in the media a lot about exactly how we were cooperating with the PIC. We also take on some matters that come from the State Capture Commission, as far as, for example, Posasa is concerned, Bombella, and we look at all of these matters as part of our regular function, our regulatory role, and we basically also work closely with some of the other regulators like SARS and the Independent Regulatory Board for Auditors in receiving reports of irregularities, and we go out and do these investigations. As far as prospectuses is concerned, we receive a number of 48, which is an average number that we receive. There isn't big swings as far as prospectuses is concerned, and this is an indication of activity in the public company space. I just hand over to Mr. Dukwana to take us to some of the matrices of the APP.
All right. Thank you, Chair. Good morning to all of the members and the Chair of the committee. I'm just going to cover the performance table. that is on the screen there. What I must say is that in 2018-19, we actually did quite well because we achieved all of the targets that we said would achieve in terms of our key performance areas. Firstly, under goal one, we had the one that dealt with the issue of the percentage of the website performance for e-services. What we envisage or we aspire to as CIPC is that there should be a maximum availability of the CIPC website, because we know that most of the people do most of their transactions online, and therefore we aim to have the availability 24/7, so to speak, in terms of what we had set up ourselves. The target was 93%. The reason we're putting 93% was obviously because there may be issues of maintenance from time to time, and they may not be as available as we want. So we put 93% for the target for 2018-19. We achieved 95%, which means we exceeded by 2%. Reason being that the ICT infrastructure was, we had more monitoring of the IT infrastructure internally, and the website operated optimally, as it were. The second one was around the issue of the number of provinces where CIPC has SSTs, which is self-service terminals, where were installed and they were operational. Now, what we envisaged there was that we wanted to be available in all of the provinces to make sure that there's a contact point, a service point, where each and every customer can be able to go to a point. Of course, that is notwithstanding the dynamics of the different provinces, because they are not the same. KwaZulu-Natal, you can't compare it with Gauteng, and Gauteng, you can't compare it, for example, with the Eastern Cape. They are different. But what we envisaged was that there should be a point in each and every province, which we viewed it as a start. So we achieved the 9 that we had aimed to do. So we're available in all of the 9 provinces. We have the SSTs. The reason we became quicker in achieving in the Eastern Cape, because we achieved it before time, was because I think that there was more collaboration, I think, worked more effectively in the Eastern Cape than the other areas, which assisted us in achieving the target before we actually wanted to achieve, because we had aimed at 8 and achieved the 9 that were basically there. The next one was around the percentage of CIPC services with an option to file electronically compared to the services which may only be available manually. Now, as we drive CIPC towards more electronic availability and digital automation of the services that we basically provide, we had aimed to achieve 26% of the services that must be available also electronically. Now, you will realize that when we were automating initially, what we targeted was the services that are actually high demand kind of the services. So as we go along, we try and catch up and see what is it that we can do. So we achieved the 26%. There was no deviation there. Now, if you look at strategic objective 1.3, which is on the same page, we aimed to have a score of between 1 and 10 for the customer and value, customer and stakeholder index, which was indicating the satisfaction of the stakeholders as well as customers. Initially, we aimed to achieve 7 of that score out of 10. We achieved 7.4%. So customers rated us better in that period than before. So that's why we achieved that. The next page, we start with the next page. We'll start with where 1 point is written 2.1, goal number 2.1, strategy objective 2.1. Number one, we looked at the number of the education and awareness events on IP that were conducted. Now, this is focusing on IP, so it's not just awareness on everything. The focus was on IP because we thought that IP itself is one of the areas that we must focus to because it's a core business of what we do. Where we aim to achieve 30 of those, we ended up achieving 56, which means we exceeded by 26%. Reason being that the stakeholders and the customers responded far much better than we initially had anticipated. So we were able to do more IP interventions than we actually anticipated we would do. The next one is 2.2, where we were looking at the number of education and awareness events on IP and enforcement, because that one now we're looking at the enforcement, not just IP broadly, but also enforcement which is part of our mandate. There we aimed to achieve 6, we achieved 9, and the reason for us achieving 9 was because the special request that we received, had a future collaboration benefits, basically. That is why we're able to achieve some of the things that we achieved. The next page, I think we'll jump those two, because it looks like it's a duplication, that one. So we'll leave that that point there. I think I'll hand over to finance.
Good day to the committee. Thank you. I would like to talk firstly about the audit opinions for the received from the Auditor General. From 2017 to 2019, CIPC received 3 clean audits. That means that the financial statements were unqualified, no material findings in compliance with laws and regulations, as well as an unqualified opinion for predetermined objectives. One of the highlights for the 2018-19 year was that the financial statements had absolutely no misstatements, as well as zero irregular expenditure, as well as zero fruitless expenditure. Our annual financial statements for 2018-19, comparing from March 17 to March 19, our current assets decreased substantially from 1.5 billion to 769 million. The reason for that primarily was due to the surrender of services in the region of 1.3 billion over the 2 years to National Treasury. That's the reason we've gone down from 1.5 billion to 760 million. Under total liabilities, we see an increase from March 17 to March 19 from 360 million to 422 million. However, of that 422 million in March 2019, 240 million related to a liability against the National Treasury relating to the surrender of the surplus, which was subsequently paid in May after year end. The financial performance from March 17 to March 19. March 17 total income was 596 million as opposed to 567 million in March 19. That decrease is attributed mainly to the loss of interest due to the surrender of the surpluses. To put that into context, in 2017, we will see later in the slide, CIPC received 125 million in interest income as opposed to 47 million in 2019, and that's the reason for the decrease in expenditure. For the decrease in income. Total expenditure has increased over the period or from March 18 to March 19 just by 2%, and that is as a result of better cost containment in certain areas, especially in administrative and operating expenditure. Our operational performance versus our budget for 2018-19. The total budget for revenue was 553 million and our actual revenue was 566 million. That's just a 2% variance. We basically came in very, very close to actual revenue. The other income, the variance on other income, 168% variance on other income, relates primarily to income received on customer deposits older than 3 years. We do not, CIPC does not budget for this, and it can vary from year to year. So in certain years there is a huge influx or there is a huge customer deposit that comes into revenue. Expenditure, our employee costs as well as depreciation came in basically at budget with minus 2% and minus 1% variance. Our operating expenditure and administrative expenditure, 41% savings as well as 10% savings. The operating expenditure is mainly due to savings in communication, i.e. internet costs much lower than expected due to the decreasing costs of internet. And administrative expenditure is due to cost savings in travel conference venues, primarily due to that. Our revenue trends from March 2017 to March 2019, as you can see, our operating revenue increased from 468 million to 508 million. That is normal increases through operating revenue. What I would like to take the community to is the decrease in interest as on the far right, from 121 million in 2017 to 50 million in 2019. That is due to the decrease in the accumulated surplus due to surrender to National Treasury. Operating expenditure trend for over the three-year period. Our employee costs averaged an increase of about 15% per year. That is mainly due to increases, annual increases, as well as filling of senior positions over the two-year period. The operating expenditure decrease, as we can see and as stated earlier, our operating expenditure decreased over the 3 years from 109 million to 101 million, and administrative expenditure remains stable at about the 38 million rand mark. Those are due to communication cost decrease as well as consulting fees decrease in operating expenditure, and administrative expenditure is mainly due to austerity measures in travel as well as conference and venues. Depreciation and impairment losses, an increase from 10.5 million to 20 million over the three-year period. That is due to the increase in the new assets that we have. CIPC is automating, therefore there's software there was investment in software as well as hardware. This increase in capital expenditure obviously results in having newer assets, and those new assets result in increased depreciation costs. I'd like to hand over to the Commissioner for the first quarter report. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair and members. That is the end of the annual report. We move into the first quarter now of the 1920 year. I will deal with the key highlights before we deal with some of the other aspects of the matrices. The first one is that one thing that we're really proud of is we started the development of what is called a Biz Portal. This was a presidential initiative together with the Department of Trade and Industry Division called Invest SA. It is a centralized portal for entrepreneurs and business people to access government services. I would like to think of it as a real start of e-governance. I'm very passionate about this, and we quite had a very good launch, which I'll also discuss as far as the quarter two is concerned. We also launched a CIPC broadcast, an online streaming radio service. This is to inform our clients of what we're doing as an organization on a weekly basis. We have topical issues that one can access. It's like a radio station, basically, but it's only for like an hour. We promote it on our website and social media, and then we have people who listen in and ask us questions. We're able to respond to them. We managed to get, we won an award about a year or two back, and we used the funds for that award to buy the equipment, so it never came out of our capital expenditure, and therefore we're quite proud of the fact that we have our own little radio station, as it were. We looked at the office accommodation project. We know that we're trying to move. The DTI said to us that we need to vacate the campus. We're actively now working towards finding new premises. We're working very closely with the Department of Public Works. We know that the tender's gone out, and we basically are trying to procure a building for us quite urgently. We also took over the chairmanship of the IP BRICS activities. IP BRICS is the head of intellectual property offices. We meet on an annual basis twice a year. We basically deal with the issues around it. Comes out of the summit, the presidential summits. The presidential summit in 2013 mentioned the issue of our collaboration in IP. We've been working together for all those couple of years. We've got work streams that we work actively here. We have teams within each office that work towards convergence and also dealing with the increasing of knowledge in IP areas, the increase of information and data, the cross-referencing of data, the cross-movements of data, as well as the use of websites and other activities. So it's been quite successful. We hosted it in South Africa in April, and therefore we had quite a successful meeting as far as that is concerned. In terms of the standardized business reporting, we also started a new process called Hard Stop to say that if you lodge an annual return with us, you have to lodge your financial information. You can't have them at separate times, because this is exactly what the companies access. Many companies only used to lodge their annual return. They used to fail to lodge their financial information with us. there's been a request for the financial information, and now we say that you can't have one without the other. You have to log in together, and basically using the XBRL portal together with the hard stop functionality that we implemented, we're basically seeing an increase as far as financial statement submissions, and therefore we have the ability in the business intelligence not only to receive them and disclose them, which is a core responsibility of ours, but also the business intelligence that's built into XBRL gives us the capability to see whether areas of non-compliance. So we have non-compliance matrices, we contact companies that have failed to do their duties in terms of financial reporting in IFRS, or, as the taxonomy says, companies act non-compliance areas. So we're quite proud of the fact that we have this regulatory tool that we can utilize and basically be able to deal with that. In terms of the three programs, they're exactly the same as the annual report, service-driven access, etc. In terms of service-driven access, we were able to implement and develop what is called K2 business process management. This gives us the ability to automate fully on all applications in terms of new infrastructure. We did a lot of work in the first quarter. We actually have now completed it, and we are rolling out cooperatives as well as name reservations on the new K2 platform. It basically gives us the ability to have and take power over our new applications as well as our new registration portals. It also gives us the ability to do more work and further work on our mobile applications as far as that is concerned. We also looked at our future view enterprise architecture. As an organization, we plan ahead in conjunction with what we call Vision 2030 and our future view enterprise architecture. We look at how the organization will look like in the future, and we're planning for it actively. We have teams that are working towards it. Mr. Dukwana, for example, is working very closely in the strategy unit with Vision 2030. That also ties up with what our infrastructure will look like, what our IT will look like, what our organization will look like, and what services we want to give going forward. So we continue to plan, we continue to innovate, and we continue to look at the development of our future state. It is an organization-wide. We take it down to the lowest level. We don't only meet as managers. Staff are also involved in sessions, and basically they also want to see where the organization is headed going to. This ties up very well with what we're doing next in terms of organizational design. I should say that one of the biggest headaches that we've got in the organization currently is trying to deal with staff that are underutilized. Because we are a highly automated organization, we have staff that are currently underutilized in terms of service. We need to reorganize ourselves, we need to have new organograms, and we need to look at areas for which we're not doing so well in that are staff intensive and move and multi-skill and multi-train and train up staff in those particular areas. So the 2020 year is going to be a massive year as far as redesigning ourselves and looking at the design of our organization going forward. We have appointed a service provider to assist us, and we will be actively starting in January. As far as innovation and creativity is concerned, we work very closely with what is called the European Patent Office, one of the biggest patent offices in the world. It's one of the top five. We have what is called an enhanced MOU, Memorandum of Understanding with them. We were the first country in the world to have this enhanced MOU with the EPO. They are actively involved in on-site training of our examiners, as well as assisting us with our legislative amendments to our South African Patent Act. We require that to be done, as I said earlier, in terms of us moving towards substantive examination of patents. We also work closely with the WIPO in terms of the system that we'll utilize in order for us to search and the applications. We're using the IPAS system. We've agreed to have it on board. And the fact that we're also going to be having WIPO staff member in our office to assist us for a year, if not more, we'll be able to utilize the system fairly efficiently. We also have an internship program that we started, and it's commenced. The recruitment process started in quarter one, but I'm happy to say that in quarter two is now completed. We have 30 new interns which have started with us. Very bright-eyed 20-year-olds that have got massive degrees longer than my arm, because in terms of patents, you're required to have all these massive degrees in order to search, and I'm quite happy the fact that we have these new interns that have joined us for a period of 2 years. After 2 years, we'll assess them, we'll take the brightest and the best, and basically make them form part of the CIPC team as far as being substantive search and examiners within the organization. Let me just deal with a couple of figures and numbers going forward. In terms of companies registered, we did 98,666 in the first quarter. Average of 2 working days, you must be wondering why 2, not 1, when I said earlier, is because of the migration that we were doing in the organization. We had a couple of outages, we had a couple of ICT failures, we had a couple of power failures, we had a whole bit of couples. So we had to try and deal with that pushed us back slightly for the teams of many to catch up, and they're banking on the normal turnaround time. This is quarter one going forward. We had about 2890 cooperatives registered also in a very quick time, an average of 2 working days. Annual financial lodged us in terms of XVL is a steady increase. We're seeing it working. Very few glitches. It's a very highly automated system. We're also glad that the accounting profession is on board, the auditing profession is on board. They're quite happy with it. We held an XBRL mini in Dava probably about 3 months ago, where we had a whole lot of stakeholders, and there was only positive things to say. We thought they're going to bash us to say we're bringing in more bureaucracy, but at the end of the day, they see the value of it. They see the value of the data that come through the XBRL portal and the process, and they're also able to utilize that data going forward. The data will also be utilized within government departments in order for them to make economic decisions. We're in close discussion, for example, with Stats SA, with SARS, with the South African Reserve Bank, with FISCA, what they call Financial Sector Conduct Authority. We have lots of meetings with them because the use of the data is going to be very important to them. Also the fact that they're also going to be starting their own XBRL processes, and we as the guinea pig, as it were, so we're also assisting them in the challenges that we had, as well as the process that was undertaken by us going forward. Annual returns, we continue to see the increase therein. The Hunter functionality has certainly assisted us as far as concerned, and therefore we're seeing the fact that we have this financial data in our position, we must be able to utilize it going forward in terms of what we need to do. Some of the high-profile investigations in the first quarter, as you can see, very much aligned to what is happening in the state capture. African Global was one of some of the big ones. AOS Technology, which is still ongoing as far as the PIC is concerned, and therefore we continue to deal with the issue around reckless trading. When they are insolvent, they continue to deal with that. I'll hand over to Lugine to deal with that. Talbot.
For quarter one, in terms of our performance, we actually achieved about 78% of the targets we had set out. There are only two areas where we hadn't met our own targets. One was in relation to the issue of the percentage of public companies that have filed annual returns by the end of the reporting period. And the second one was in relation to the public companies that have filed audited financial statements on time during the reporting period. In those areas, the challenge that we are having is that there's new functionality that has been introduced, the hard stop that has been introduced, and it became a little bit tough for some of the people to understand how they basically work. So that is one of the contributions. But generally, we have a challenge with the filing of the annual returns by the various companies. And the reason we went for public companies was because it's a smaller sample. It's the one that we believed they can be able to comply, and we must assist them in the compliance with that. So those are the two that actually let us down in terms of our overall performance. But in as far as the website performance that we continue to be measuring, we achieved 96% in terms of what we had said to achieve in quarter one, we said to achieve 93%. So the ICT improvements there, I think that we experienced quite a few ICT improvements that came into play at the beginning of the quarter. And then the other issues were around the second one, which is the CIP services with an option to file electronically. We still maintain that. We had aimed at 26%. We have maintained the 26% that we had actually aimed for this specific one. The next one was in relation to the education and awareness events conducted by CIPC, specifically on the Companies Act and the related legislation. We had aimed to achieve, we didn't have the ones to achieve this quarter, but we were able to do over 17 of those ones. Reason being that there's influx of requests that we're getting from the DCIs for one, but also other stakeholders from outside CIPC that are interested in the services. So we respond when there's a request that is basically there. So that's why we achieved more than what we thought we would not be able to work on. Then the next one was an issue of the number of education and awareness events on IP that we actually conducted. Again, there we aimed to achieve 8. We achieved 27 of those ones. Obviously, the issue here is a positive response, again, from the various stakeholders, including the creative sector. And I think that one of the reasons for the creative sector may have been related also to the issue of the laws that are related to creativity in relation to the creative sector that we're actually busy with. So there may be some relations there. But also there was an increase in the partnerships that related in more events than we anticipated. And then the next one was in relation to the education awareness related to enforcement. On that one again, we aimed to achieve 2 for the quarter under review, and we achieved 3 due to the positive response again of the stakeholders that we identified. The other one was in relation to the number of days to register a company from the date of receipt. There we achieved the 2, I think it has already been mentioned. Our target was 2, we achieved the 2, because we anticipated the kind of the changes in the ICT that were going to have an impact in our response times. For a co-op, we aimed to achieve 3 days, we actually achieved 2 days. So it means that there has been a slight improvement compared to what we had aimed to achieve. The contrary is the ICT system for companies was for co-ops was a little bit more stable because they are working on 2 different systems with the company. And then the other one, we looked at the issue of the education, the Companies Act. I've already dealt with it, so I'll take that aside. Those are the other 2 that I was talking to that we did not achieve, which is mainly the public companies that have filed annual returns and the financial statements. And one, if you look at the all the 484 public companies expected to file annual returns, 206 public companies actually filed, which means we achieved 49% of that. We anticipate that as the customers adapt to the filing of the annual financial statements, the compliance rate should be able to improve in relation to the issue of the annual returns. But in relation to the audited financial statements, we had aimed to achieve 60% of that. We achieved 53. Now, of the 421 public companies that were expected to file the annual financial statements in the first quarter, we only were able to have 223 public companies that actually filed. Again, the anticipation there is the issue that the HACCP functionality system and the follow-ups of non-compliance in accordance with the we'll investigate those and see how we can enhance those ones. But also we need to be a little bit more proactive in relation of encouraging compliance to the annual financial statements and the use of the new functionality that is basically there. So it's ongoing education that actually goes with that, which we hope that the results will be positive at the end of the day.
Thank you, Committee. I will take you through the first quarter financial information. The overview of the annual budget 2019-20. From 2017-18 year through to the 2019-20 year, we can see there was a decrease in the budgeted revenue from 705 million to 596 million. This is primarily due to the loss of interest income due to surpluses surrendered to National Treasury. Our budgeted operating expenditure in 18-19 as well as 19-20 equaled our budgeted revenue, which basically means that we did not budget for any surpluses for those years. Our operational performance for quarter one, our operating revenue as well as our interest revenue is basically 3% variance, 1% and 3% variance from our budget, with a 24% variance on the other income. This again is due to the fact that certain elements of other income are not budgeted for. Employee costs, there is a 13% savings compared to budget. However, this normalized, as we will see when we get to this second quarter, due to performance bonuses being paid. The other expenditure is much lower due to certain, this being the first quarter of the year, as the first quarter, so there are certain instances where procurement takes a bit longer and some of the expenditure moved to the second quarter. Our revenue analysis, June 2018 compared to June 2019, that's the first quarter of the 1920 year versus the first quarter of the prior year. Overall, there was a 5% increase in revenue, with annual returns contributing 7%, disclosures 10%, and patents 10% to the increase. Companies, there was a small decrease of 1%. Trademarks, as the Commissioner stated earlier, a decrease of 10%. Co-ops, a decrease of 9%. our annual expenditure budget versus our actual quarter one expenditure. I would like to speak about the operating expenditure first. We spent 19% of our budget and we left with 81% of the budget in the first quarter. Our budget is basically linear, and therefore we were short by about 6% on the total budget. Our capital expenditure budget, we did not spend anything. The reason for that being that the CapEx budget for this year is much higher due to the fact that we budgeted for a move to a new building. However, that move to the new building will probably take place next year, and most of that budget, the majority of our CapEx budget, will be moved to the next year. Our operational expenditure analysis, current year versus prior, our employee costs, 6% increase in employee costs compared to 2018, which basically is in line with increases. Our expenditure remained relatively, our operating and administrative expenditure remained relatively stable, and our depreciations increased by 20% due to the fact that we are investing in newer assets, and therefore depreciation costs increase. Our capital expenditure analysis, as stated earlier, we basically had 0%, but we can see there those are the actual numbers. We had a budget in the first quarter of 10 million rand for software, 6 million rand for hardware, and 14 million as well as 3 million for items relating to the new building, and there was hardly any spending in the first quarter for the reasons as stated earlier. And the last slide is actually a duplicate. I'd like to hand back to the commissioner. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, CFO. I'll move to the last part of the presentation, which is the second quarter. Just to highlight some aspects of the second quarter performance is that, as I said, the tender for the OD was evaluated and has now been awarded, and I said we're going to start. Our interns did start. After a lengthy recruitment process, we received a couple of thousand of applications. We only needed 30, so it was quite a lengthy process that we undertook. And the fact that they're highly qualified also was to try and sift through to try and get the best out of them, and basically they are now on their training program as far as them becoming searches and examiners of patents. We also, as a EXCO, approved the concept for the IPAS system for WIPO for full implementation after going through a pilot phase for about 2 years, and basically we are implementing that in terms of it becoming part of our IT infrastructure. Some aspects on delivery access, in the second quarter, there's 109,000 new companies, average in 1 day. 3,200 co-ops are also registered within the acceptable time frame as per the APB. Some of them are slightly out of it. Query resolution system, we logged quite a few tickets in the 9,000 mark, and we tried to deal with those as efficiently and as quickly as possible. On social media, Facebook, we had over 800,000 impressions. We probably got about 30,000 Facebook active users on the CIPC Facebook page, as well as something like between 10 and 15,000 Twitter users and other parts of the social media. So we have quite a sizable social media presence, which we use it for multiple reasons. K2 is well on its way. I'm looking at implementing the name system by replacing the legacy Verity system. It's going to be a big system. The Verity system is a name searching system that has been used forever, even before I joined the organization many, many years ago. So we're glad that we're moving to new infrastructure as well as a more comprehensive searching and approval system for names. Maybe that will tie in also effectively in terms of the new names guidelines, so we don't have some of them going to the company's tribunal. We also proud to say that we are part of what is called the Inventors Assistance Program by WIPO. We were the fourth country globally to join this. We were asked by WIPO to join it. Basically, it is a program whereby inventors and those who want to patent will be able to receive pro bono assistance from attorneys. So we got a panel of attorneys that will give them free of charge, and basically we have a screening committee that goes through, and I'm glad to say that we have approved 3 applications to date. Others do not meet the patentability criteria. So these are indigent inventors who come up with great systems, but it's very expensive to patent, as we all know, and therefore now we have this pro bono system working with large attorneys, which is facilitated through the CIPC in terms of an inventors assistance program. IP for Kids is going to be a big thing for us. We started it in August 2019, Media Week, 180 learners. Also, when I was at the summer school in Bloemfontein, we also invited a whole lot of kids from schools. I spoke to them about IP, because we want to start the program of of educating the IP system, not only from tertiary education, but also from the schooling system, making them understand exactly from a young age how to be inventors, what will you do to protect it, etc., etc. Very much excitement among the school kids. We give them examples from South Africa, how successful certain inventors have been, and we give them examples of exactly items that they know of that have been invented by South Africans, and therefore we see that as part of our education and awareness activities going forward. As far as, I think this is some of the duplication as we have here. The second part, yes, I think so. Yeah, so as I said, some of it has been repeated, but in terms of what we did in the second quarter, we had compliance notices to those particular companies, and more compliance notices is a tool that we utilize in order to force compliance with companies, or alternatively we find them and take them to court. We received over 15,000 annual financial statements received by SPRL, which is a really great number, and we also had more than 75,000 submitted their annual returns within the 30-day business period, which is prescribed by the legislation. We also receive quite a few through the hard stop functionality, which includes what is called financial vulnerability supplements. If you do not find XBRL and you're a lesser company that are not required to file in audited financial statements, you file a very simplified version of what your financials have looked like. What is the last part?
The story for the performance for the second quarter, we still achieved 78% like we did in the first quarter, because of the same two that we thought that would be able to make an impact on. There has been serious discussions on the achievement of those two, and there are now plans to say how will we move forward with them in terms of that. There was even a proposal on one that maybe we should consider removing it, but we refused because we said there's more work that needs to be done on the educational aspect to make sure that we drive the compliance to that one. So we continue to achieve on the one that relates to the website performance, which we achieved the 95% out of the 93 that we had anticipated. We had also achieved the one that was relating to the percentage of CIBC services and option to file electronically, as well as the one on the stakeholder and the customer value index. It's not due. It was not due in the quarter under review, so that one was not due at that time. And then the other ones, the number of days to register a company, I think we maintained, we went back to one, which is quite good. And then for customer in relation to cooperatives registration, we maintained two. And then in relation to the education awareness, which is 2.1, we were able to achieve the one that was expected in terms of the awareness events that we wanted to hold. An event we held that event in Rustenburg around August. On the next page, we have dealt with the issue of the company registration and the cooperatives, as well as the issue of the education. The two that I spoke about, during 2018, I think in the comparative period, we had a 7% decrease in terms of the companies that were actually registering, were submitting the annual returns as we anticipated on that. So there's a slight improvement, but we're not doing as well as we should be doing in that area, because we're sitting at 57, so we underachieved it by 3% in that particular period. I hope that it's something that is going to give us there will be a survey that will be undertaken, and there will be interventions that will be made on it. And then the other one in relation to the annual financial statements, again on that one we're on 39%. There is also investigations that we are dealing with those to make sure that our education awareness can be able to talk to those aspects. So these two remain our areas of concern, and we are putting more efforts and resources to make sure that we can pull through the two of them, because they can dampen our performance if we don't manage them.
Thank you. I will go through the second quarter financial information. The overview of the annual budget, that slide is exactly the same as the slide that was in the first quarter, so I will skip over that slide. The operational performance for quarter two, April 2019 to September 2019, here we have a 1% overall variance in revenue, very similar to the prior year. Very similar to the prior year, and the forecast year-end is a slight increase in our total revenue compared to our budget. Our employee costs, we have a saving of 1% compared to 3% in the prior year. This, as stated in the first quarter, the second quarter expenditure normalized due to bonuses being paid. There is a slight improvement in the spending of operational and administrative expenditure with 44%, with just a 44% variance compared to budget. This increased as compared to the first quarter. Our revenue analysis, September current year versus September the prior year, there is now an 11% total increase, with companies contributing a 4% increase, annual returns a 15% increase, disclosures a 10% increase, and patents contributing 9% to that increase. Trademarks again in this quarter reflecting a decrease of 6% compared to the prior year, as well as co-ops and copyrights with 23% and 86% respectively. Our CAPEX and OPEX budget. Our OPEX budget, we spent 42% of the budget and are remaining with 58% of the budget for the second half of the financial year. That means we are 8% under budget for the year, for the half year. The CAPEX budget, the spending against CAPEX budget improved slightly, where we spent 4%. This is mainly due to expenditure relating to IT hardware. But as stated when I spoke about the first quarter, the CAPEX budget, most of it will be carried through to the next year due to the new building which we will have to move into. Our operational expenditure analysis, current year versus prior year as at the mid-year, our employee costs, there's an 8% increase, which basically is in line with increased percentages. Our operating expenditure, there's a 2% variance, basically remaining stable with the prior year. And the increase again on depreciation and impairment when compared to the prior year is basically due to the increase in the number of new assets that we have. Our capital expenditure analysis, as stated earlier, we can see that the 4 million rand relating to the 4% that we have spent is primarily due to the increase in IT hardware, which relates to computers which we are rolling out to all staff. I would hand over to...
We'll take the last part of our presentation with the key challenges. We've got our risk officer with us, basically, but Amina will take us through it.
Thank you so much, and good day to the committee. We have spoken so much about our efforts to try and modernize the operations of the organization, and all this does not come without any challenges and or risks. So I'll just take you through some of the challenges, that key challenges and risks that we are facing and that we are trying to deal with. The first one relates to the staff uncertainty. We've spoken about modernization, technological changes that we are undergoing, and that on its own brings about that uncertainty where staff is not really certain what's going to happen to them. Their roles are changing. Am I still going to be doing the same thing that I was doing? And if not, what is the impact on my role and my function? And so we have embarked on an organizational design process, which is a process that seeks to align the strategy and these functions that are changing. And that on its own presents us with that challenge where staff is not sure what's going to happen to their functions. But we have tried as management to engage the staff, labor, on an ongoing basis to ensure that we bring that certainty and to try and allay certain fears. Some of them may be rumors, and we've tried to engage the staff to try and clarify certain questions that they may have. On the same issue of modernization, the commissioner has spoken about the challenges we've had with the system. If the systems go down, it has a direct impact on the number of calls that we are going to get and the queries that we get from customers. And that on its own has an impact on our reputation, because if it's down, even if it's 2 minutes, everyone goes to the call center. They want to know what is happening, why can't we register our companies, and we have limited staff within the call center, and it results in the increase in the number of calls that we receive, and unhappiness obviously will result from customers. The next challenge relates to the WIPOS, the IPAS system that the commissioner spoke about as well. We went through that pilot phase, but obviously there were certain questions and risks that we saw. WIPOS sent through one of their experts to us so that he can clarify the issues that we had. He came through, we asked all the questions that we wanted to ask, and I think we are at a point where we are comfortable that it is a system that we can work with. It is a system that will help us become the organization that we want to become. And so we are working closely with WIPO to address some of the issues that, or potential issues and risks that may come or emanate from this process. On the next slide, on the IP side, we have spoken that we have tried to modernize most of our processes, but on the trademarks, patents and design registration section, most of those processes remain largely manual, and the process underway to ensure that even that side we automate. And obviously if we automate that side as well, there will be issues that we are looking at, there are risks that will come, and we are trying to deal with those risks as we go on trying to automate. On the business regulation side, we have seen a low uptake on the use of the independent review as a form of assurance. What we have tried to do is to ensure that everyone has an opportunity. They don't use the audit process, which can sometimes be very expensive, and that is why some of the companies and cooperatives do not comply, because it is a bit expensive. So we've introduced this independent review, but the uptake has been on the low side. And so we've engaged with the different auditing and professional bodies to try and see where the challenge could be, so that we can assist the different entities in complying, because if they don't comply, then we have a challenge as well. And we have planned webinar events to ensure that the audience is addressed, and they are able to also to tell us what the issues are, and we are able to deal with the challenges as they present them to us. I will hand over to the Commissioner, to Samidora.
Thank you very much, Vatabile, and thank you, committee members. Before we close, I just want to mention one last matter, which is a key challenge. The organization over the last possibly 2 years has been faced with a bit of an onslaught of a reporting of a so-called whistleblowing report, where there's allegations that have been made against myself, allegations have been made against almost every single EXCO member, including other senior managers, about activities at the CIPC, and it has been reported to the Parliament, it has been reported to the Public Protector, it has been reported to multiple parties individually, it has been reported to the media, reported to the ministry, it's reported everywhere. We at every juncture have responded to it. We have made documentation available. But the most important aspect that has occurred is that it was reported to the Audit Committee and the AG. We then fully cooperated with the Auditor General, to supply them with all the information. The report has come out to say unsubstantiated. We find ourselves as extremely governed. We know where this is coming from. It is an abuse of a system. It is an abuse of an individual who believes that they have some sort of a vendetta against the organization. And we said that we have done it to hide. We've received clean audits, no material misstatements, no irregular expenditure, no fruitless expenditure. This is just an abuse of a system. We basically have a report that has come out from the AG to say these claims are unsubstantiated and they're frivolous and vexatious. And therefore we can get it from the AG and share it with the committee. I know that the committee chairperson, for example, has been requested to also comment on it, and we supplied all the information to the office of the DG. The DG has also been commenting on this matter to say that there is nothing towards it, and therefore we just want to put on the table to say that we regard the matter as now closed, but we also seek assistance as far as closing it, because on an annual basis we have to respond to this. It brings about unnecessary responses. We've done it on numerous occasions, and therefore we want to see some sort of closure to these matters. Thank you very much, Chairperson and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Chair. Maybe we can actually invite the committee members to comment or ask questions. Cuthbert, any other hand? Morgan, Mudaum, and Mbuya, in that order. Cuthbert?
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, of particular interest to me is the ease of doing business and what the CBRC is doing to make it easier for South Africans to do business. Now, I think there's been, you know, a lot of progress that's been made in terms of creating the online portal and, you know, trying to streamline the processes as well and the administrative and bureaucratic burden that there is on business owners in order to register. However, what I haven't heard mentioned is the 30 days that it takes for the compensation fund to, you know, do its inspections and the like, or shall I say rather conduct an assessment of what necessary measures need to be put in place by that business in certain industries. Now, what progress is being made to incorporate that into the portal? What engagements have been had with the Department of Labour or Employment and Labour regarding that? And when will we likely see, you know, either an algorithm that can be included on that particular portal to make this an easier process, because I imagine that there is a statistically viable way in which one can assume what, you know, what would be required, as opposed to having to go out and do a physical inspection each time, because surely there should be industry standards. So if I could just get a little bit more information regarding that.
Thank you. No, it's a comprehensive, plaudable presentation. Lots of innovation and progress made. I just want to make a comment. I would have loved to have this document received it beforehand, because there's lots of technical information here, which makes it, to me, impossible to really comment in detail. I've only received it just now when I came into the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Let me welcome the report. And applaud the entity with two issues. One, the good audit outcome. Secondly, the accessibility of your website. I have a few questions. One, I want to know what is the turnaround time when you want to deregister a company. Secondly, the high rate of incoming calls. Your call center is a serious matter. For a person to access your call center, personally, I failed in 3 days. Then I decided to not to call the call center. The other question, your report, would like if your report somewhere can speak with your organizational structure. In your executive, how many females are in key positions? How many disabled, and how many staff is the CIPC, the number you have? And then the ICT and the goods marketing of the entity, quick accessibility of the entity. Per financial year, how much did you spend only for the marketing, your website, and your system? Thank you, Chair.
Mine is on the organizational design. Because here we're not told, just were told that they were changing the rules in terms of we want to design a structure that will speak to the WIPO arrangement and the ICT. but also we are told that there's a staff uncertainty. That on its own, it tells what before they advertised that the program of the organizational design that is closed around July or June, they were never engagement with the staff, because currently if they were, there will never be any uncertainty about that, because workers will know what is exactly the department wants to achieve or the entity per se. It is proper, Chair, that in the report we should have the organizational structure that must be redesigned. We know exactly what is it that they want to achieve in redesigning the organizational. And also check in terms of the old skills that is there, what is it that you want, because you will find a situation where people will lose their jobs here. And maybe in terms of the one-stop arrangement, I want to check, because here they are saying if you want to register with CIPC, it's 30 minutes, 45 minutes. You register a company, and then you wait for SARS for 8 days. You wait for labor in terms of that other thing for 85 days and so forth. So what is the arrangement in terms of the ease of doing business in terms of the one-stop shop, as they are saying? To say you can register the company in 30 minutes, you register with SARS and labor in terms of all those things. What is the process moving forward? Because for them only to be ICT gurus without the company tribunal, it's not part of them. And I just want to check even the relationship between those two, the tribunal. Because really, seemingly, there are challenges here. As much as we understand that the tribunal is policing the CIPC in terms of their mandate and their role, but somehow there must be a working relationship, because they are talking of Twitter. We only see CIPC on those Twitter. What about the company tribunal? Because the awareness must go hand in hand that there's this tribunal. If you are not certain about these issues in terms of the registration, you can also go to the tribunal and so forth. So we want to just check as to what is the arrangement in terms of working relations. And also, I think those allegations that he raised, we heard about it. I'm also happy that he raised it himself before we need clarity. So we are fine with it. Just that we need to have, as a committee, to have a report that seeks to address it. To say, like, if they've written that report to a chairperson, the chairperson has got all the information, these issues, allegations, until proven, whatsoever. But we must respond to the chair, because really this thing, it's got a bearing in our committee, to say, here the commission has challenges and we are not responding as a committee. Occupying own offices and vis-a-vis the product, because while you're changing the ICT, somehow you're changing even the normal arrangement to say you can't register normally. And if that system is down, that means you are not doing anything. So we want to check as to how are they going to balance, because the normal arrangement must continue as much as we're changing to the system computerized as ICP and the WIPO. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll pause there for now.
Thank you, Chair. May I take this opportunity to, on behalf of the African National Congress, congratulate the uh, CIPC's management, led by the Commissioner, for the good work that they've done, for the positive message that's out there in terms of your brand. You know, I think you've gone a long way to towards the President's undertaking to improve the ease of doing business, but there are challenges, as has been raised by Honorable Mbuyane. I would just like to know, it's obvious that you have a very aggressive media campaign, that you interact on social media, etc. I just want to piggyback on what Honorable Mbuyane has said about taking the tribunal along, because the tribunal is a mechanism that's there for people to have their disputes, as we heard, mediated without astronomical legal costs. And one would, it's a service the government has given to people who need that type of service, and I think it's really something we should market as widely as we market the CIPC. I'm not quite sure. I know I've been moving in and out a bit, and my apologies for that, Chairperson, whether we have a clear picture of the legislative amendments or the work that this committee needs to do around what needs to be amended or processed in terms of legislation to improve the work and the reach of the CIPC. Thank you very much.
Maybe before we allow you to comment or respond, I think maybe one would like just to also highlight the point you have raised in terms of the whistleblowing. I think it will be important that the committee and the department will actually have a look at that, so that we have an agreed approach. You know, it's not a point of, you know, kicking things away from us in a way of actually not taking responsibility. I think that will be quite important that we encourage the commissioner as well in terms with the DG to actually advise the committee on how we take the process forward. The second point, I think there is actually issue relating to substantive search and examination, the SSE, but it's just a point of having sense of status, just in the sense of where we at and how are things going in terms of that, I'll call it program, for lack of a better term. The final point, which I think might be quite important, the issue of underutilized staff, the issue of staff uncertainty. I think it's more of the point that there is actually lots of, say, modernization or progress in terms of actually technical space. So I'm not sure, because I think it might be very important to have sense of the employees that are there in the entity to be able to actually have a plan and program on how they can actually be assisted to develop and catch up. The thing which is always interesting when you go to the DTI campus, the visible part or which shows you that you are near a very important space, it's actually the guys who say, do you want to register? Register anything, so who registered companies. So no one will pass that straight door. Even if you're walking, sometimes the guys stop you and say, do you want to register a company? So I think it actually reflects the point that there's lots of independent participants, because they're actually out on the road and they think it's a very important issue. And I think they wouldn't have pursued it if ever they were not getting any feedback or not engaging on that space. So I think it's in the context of, you know, talking to human resource. But on my part, I'm saying it looks like the issue in terms of our analysis is much bigger than those who are employed as actually the workforce within the entity. So I think that's one point which one was thinking it might be an important issue to look at and actually discuss around that. So I think those are actually comments and questions that one was thinking we can actually just raise, highlight that, and maybe we can actually have sense of issues that we may have to look at and actually tackle moving forward. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members, for those questions and comments. I'll start off with the ease of doing business, because that is one that I take very, very personally. We have been at the forefront of trying to, for use of a better word, influence direction of the ease of doing business ranking for South Africa. The reason why we did a lot of the processes and the reason why we engaged with the World Bank for so many years to understand exactly what the methodology which is required of us as a country to order to improve has seen us do certain things within our domain, within our space. The one is that they said to us, you have to be robust in terms of your automation. You have to be robust in terms of informing your clients exactly how to utilize the systems. You have to be robust in your fee structure. You have to be robust in terms of access and turnaround. You have to look at your piece of legislation and make sure that it meets certain criteria. The issue that we have in South Africa is exactly the one that you've mentioned now. You hit the nail on the head when you said it. Is that when they look at the baskets of services that are required to start and to influence the doing business ranking, it does not only lie with one entity, it lies with multiple entities. And the fact of the matter, it lies with three. The CIPC, SARS, and the Department of Labor through UIF, Commission and Compensation Fund Commission. We have been working very, very closely with SARS is fine. The World Bank comes and says, no issues with SARS. They come in and say, no issues with CIPC. Unfortunately, the UIF and the Compensation Fund are processes that have caused us to lose in terms of our ranking. So what we have done in the last probably 6 months, we've been having commissioner-to-commissioner meetings under the auspices of InvestSA, which is a division with the Department of Trade and Industry, and also under the presidency under Trudy Makaya, in order for us to understand what needs to be done in order to have those processes reduced in terms of time. The one aspect is the introduction of the BIS portal. Now, over the period of the last few months, we have been managed to analyze their system, analyze their back-end processes, and to understand where there's duplication, where there's length of time that are just bureaucratic and shouldn't be there, as well as the fact that we can utilize better systems in order to make it faster. The BIS portal process and the BIS portal launch was based on the fact that all of those services should be done within one day. Actually, the president, when he launched it at the InvestSA conference, went and said, we actually want it in a few hours. So I'm actually making the challenge now to move it from a day to a few hours. And that is the reason why we launched it. But what we also did is that we launched it as a form of a pilot for 3 months while we iron out all the back-end processes. So as we speak here, I've actually been receiving messages to say that the teams are currently actively working towards making sure that the UIF and the compensation fund processes are brought within the space of the 24 hours. Because currently, it gets lodged through the BIS portal, the SARS function happens quickly, the CIPC one happens quickly, and then it gets stuck in the back end with the UIF and the compensation fund. And that is unacceptable because the president said 24 hours, and 24 hours is exactly what it is. We have written to our minister, Minister Patel, to inform him that he needs to speak to his counterpart in order to understand that because of the presidential initiative and the presidential launch, those back-end systems have now been given a priority. And therefore, the Department of Labor needs to prioritize it because this is out in the public domain now because they are actively sitting waiting to be processed. And that is unacceptable, in my view. So, to put your mind at ease, we are actively working towards him. We have actually sent our own developers to assist him. I have sent development teams to assist in order to make it better. But we're working towards it as a team. There is cooperation from them, and therefore we will bring it down as far as that is concerned. Regarding the submission of the presentation, I must apologize. We submitted it on the 18th of November, and we just have to see the committee secretary as to order us. The turnaround time for deregistrations, I must speak about it in two senses, right? The one is that the CIPC will only deregister a company after 2 years because the legislation says you cannot deregister before the non-submission of an annual return within a two-year space. Truth be told, we have not deregistered for a while. we're probably sitting with about between 500 and 600,000 companies that actively need to be deregistered as we speak. It's a very, very capital intensive. It cost us over 30 million. It cost us a lot of money. 30 million bucks just to register that. Because the legislation says that it must all be by registered mail through the post office. So it cost us a hell of a lot of money. We do give companies an opportunity to respond in terms of trying to say, would you like to be deregistered or not? We also work actively with the Department of, with SARS. SARS would not like many of those companies to be deregistered because they have claims, and once you deregister, it becomes problematic for them. But to answer you, it takes a very long time to deregister a company. I couldn't agree with you more regarding the call center. I make no excuses. I make no bones about it that the call center is one of the biggest areas of concern for me. We go up sometimes when we hit 90% and then we go times when we hit 30%. It just depends on what we launch. It also depends on an organization. If it goes through, for example, some glitches with an IT system, we had this massive spike and stuff like that. But we will be tackling it in terms of organization design, not only in terms of resourcing and putting more call center agents, because we definitely have to. Also, the fact that we've got staff that are underutilized, that we can obviously try and reskill them and move them into the call center environment. I think it also touches with Honorable Muyani's question about the utilization of staff. But also the fact that we need to use new tools. I don't, when it comes to latest call center technology, and we currently do not have that at the CIPC. So we tackle on two fronts. Making sure that we have a technology in place, making sure that we have the sufficient numbers and people in place, but also making sure, and this is the part that I'm very passionate about, reducing the reason why people call you. That is the most important aspect. We have projects in place, so people do not have to actually call you a lot. So we try and focus our attention on the reasons why we call, and that is the reason why in the presentation we put the reasons why people call us, and we need to actively tackle the reduction of those reasons why people call us accordingly. It's a very high priority of us. Regarding other questions about executives, how many do I have? We're an executive, how many? Seven. Eight. Seven. Three are women. One is sitting here. But Abila Kakuma, my head of executive, corporate services, a lady by the name of Amina Fakiris, is a woman, and the head of innovation and creativity, IP, is a lady by the name of Nomonde Maimela. So it's not quite a 50%, we 3-4, but we'll see how it goes. Disabilities, I have to say that maybe this is tied to what you've received, because I've just received a message in the last hour to say that the Department of Trade and Industry wanted from all the entities, our disabled disabled staff, women, etc. I think it might be tied to the question that you're asking. We're going to give it. I do not have the numbers offhand, I have to admit. I should have it, but unfortunately I don't. But because we're going to get them, Chair, the deadline is 3 o'clock today, we can submit those numbers also to the committee, to the secretary. The staff complement currently, I think you asked that other question, is approximately 5. We've just taken on new interns now, so we're not sure if we should actually put them on the staff structure, but they're part of us, we paid them, all the rest of it. We're about 525 now. Okay? Around there. I'll get this CFO just now. Let me just continue. You'll work on the marketing budget. You'll work on the annual marketing budget. Regarding the issue about OD and consultation, the relationship that we have with the unions is one whereby we have our own bargaining forum, we have our own consultative forum which meets regularly, but also the fact that I as a commissioner take it on my responsibility to meet organized labor as often as possible, actually very often, because we like to have an open door consultative process, and the biggest consultative process we're currently having, Honorable Biyani, is around organization design. How are we going to deal with the staffing? How are we going to skill the staffing? How are we going to have the training programs for the staffing? The fact that we also went out on tender and we asked, as part of the particular process, for the service provider to also assist us with a program of action will speak to our engagement with organized labor. The relationship currently is a very good one, because they understand that I have to speak to them. I have to speak to them on a weekly basis, not even on a monthly basis. On a weekly basis, we engage. Weekly basis, even if it's short and sharp, I call them coffee with the commissioner, and basically we talk about issues in the organization. They're very appreciative of that fact. They're very appreciative of the fact that I always say to them, these are my exact words, whatever I know, you must know. There's no corridor talk, there's no backdoor talk, there's no negotiations happening anywhere else. It's happening with you. So whatever I know, you must know, and therefore the relationship is one of mutual respect, mutual understanding, but also bringing them all along, bringing the entire staff along. On the 6th of December, for example, we're having an organization-wide engagement. We were talking about strategy, we were talking about Vision 2030, going forward, what we're going to do. We're going to talk about other issues in the organization with staff, and this is part of our organization design and our change management processes with staff. Because they must feel part of the process, they must feel part of what we want to do. But also what we're doing, Honorable Miani, is that we're saying that if staff feel that they want to exit, some people do not like change and they don't want to be part of it, we must be as an organization also give them opportunities. One is, if staff are at the age of 55 and up, we will get them to early retire, we'll pay the penalties, and we'll even thinking of topping it up if we've got the finances to do so. We also are engaging and trying to deal with processes around if staff want to voluntarily exit the organization. These are discussions we have in our ExCo. Trying to see if we can come up with processes in order to facilitate this so that we right-size the organization and make sure that those who want to stay are trained sufficiently, they are consulted efficiently, and they want to form part of a new organization going forward. So there's a lot of consultation as far as that is, that is concerned. You asked a question around the company's tribunal. We're actually really engaging with them. For example, I had a meeting with them probably about 3 weeks or 4 weeks ago regarding the issue around names. How do we deal with working together to make sure that we try and reduce the name disputes? How do we deal with issues around us assisting them to market their organization? I think this also speaks to what the Honorable Hermans was saying. How do we actively, for example, in our website, in our discussions and education and awareness, on our social media platforms, we're saying, clients, you have an organization that will deal with your disputes, and it's a non-fee generating organization. There's no cost associated, and this is what you shall utilize. We have started slightly, but I think that we can do more. There is one slight downside to it, and I have to mention the downside. The fact that the company tribunal actually adjudicates over us as well, we can't have too much of a holding hands between the two of them, because it could be seen that, for example, if I heard a chairperson speaking about it, and him and I must get together and discuss this. If it's known that we're funding the company tribunal, by the way, we do not have funds, but if it's known that we're going to fund it, the perception would be that any decision that it put, they will find in our favor because we're paying their salaries. You know, it can't be seen to be like that. And I'm speaking plainly and openly. We have to have a separation of these powers. But when it comes to the utilization of them by customers and clients, we certainly can, for use of a better word, market them. Because that's separate. We can put it in our systems, we can do it in our platforms, and we can say, if you have any form of dispute, we're very much willing, because we have the infrastructure, we have the marketing division, and we have the utilization of tools that we can assist them in order to drive their numbers and try to improve it. The funding part, I don't think it's conducive in the fact that they are taken to be something that can review our decision. But we can have a discussion, and I will talk to the chairperson regarding that. Thank you, Honorable Hermans, for that, regarding the issue of the work that we do. I will take it back to all my staff. All 500 of us are working really hard to maintain that. The one thing that I tell the organization going forward is that it's very easy to get a good reputation. It's very quick to lose one. So it's a maximum of every day striving to do your best. The one thing that I always say to my staff is that when you come into the morning, the most important aspect that you need to do is to service the clients. If you're not doing that, you're doing something wrong. So we've got this culture of continuous improvement. Mr. Dukwana, in terms of his Vision 2030, we speak about the continuous improvement, making things better. As I said, the reason why we've got a Vision 2030 is that we continuously, year on year, make ourselves better. We can't rest on our laurels. We have to improve and we have to think. So we thank the ANC for that. I think I spoke to the media campaign. The legislative amendments, I think there's only the three that I want to mention. The company's amendment bill, I know that it's on the parliamentary program, but the one that I want to mention specifically that will require a lot of assistance from Honorable Chairperson is the issue around the amendments to the Patent Act. I think there's a lot of discussion that requires to be had. That substantive examination ties in very much with your question, Honorable Chairperson. What is the program? What is the program that we need to see? And the program is an amendment to the Patent Act, because that is going to bring us up to speed as far as substantive examination of patents is concerned. It's no use me training patent examiners that's going to sit around for years to have an amendment to an act. It means that I'm going to be paying a salary for patent examiners that are not actually going to examine anything. It takes a have to train an examiner at an exorbitant expense. Because patent examination is an international system. These guys fly all over the world to be trained by the best officers in the world, and we need to utilize them effectively. And the only way that we can do that is if we get the Patent Act amended accordingly. The next one is that we want the Madrid Protocol to the international filing of trademarks also to go through, and therefore we need to accede as a country to that honorable chairperson. And we would really like assistance from the committee as far as that is concerned. I'm very passionate about it because IP is a space that I think that we're losing a bit of ground. Our SADC and our African colleagues are in these treaties. We are not, and we therefore need to obviously push this forward and make sure that we also accede to that going forward. Thank you very much.
Let me just do this. We sitting on the chair of our colleagues who actually are supposed in our top committee on legislation amendment 25th section 25 of the constitution should be here in the next 15 minutes. So I think what we actually agree upon is that the secretariat of the committee, we will actually follow through on all the questions. We will actually then make sure that they are in writing. So the view and attitude of my part is that maybe for the committee side, we do have next Tuesday, the 3rd of December, the 2019-22nd quarter report of the DTI and EDD, financial and non-financial performance. So that's actually going to be next Tuesday, but also there will be the 2020 oversight program we will actually be looking at. So if ever you actually can actually allow me to conclude our meeting and be able to actually pick up on that point. I see there are three hands. Cuthbert Mulder, you wanted to say something, and then Mbuyane. Cuthbert?
Thanks, Chair. Can the Secretariat please send out the invite for next week and the documentation, if you don't mind, please?
Chairperson, mine, I think, is a piggyback on the issue of royalties. Our people are dying pauper. What is it that the CIPC is doing in terms of the royalties? People are not paid, they are dying pauper while they are performing. I'm not talking international, because international they don't get anything. So I think the IMPRA and the SAMPRA issue, they must conclude and try to check as to people are being paid. What is due for them? And also, Chair, maybe the last one will be the question of the interns. I can see they want interns, and their office is central in Pretoria. Let people of South Africa within the 9 provinces be given an opportunity to can be part of this process. Thank you, Chairperson.
Can we just say, please note just further questions?
I'll respond in writing.
And then we'll actually follow through. And then,
sure.
Yeah. Can I actually maybe thank the Commissioner and the team for a very detailed presentation, and thank you very much. We're more enlightened now, and thank you for being able to actually assist us to understand what you do and how your organization works to this point. Maybe you can have a final word so that we can conclude our meeting.
Thank you much, Chairperson, and thank you guys for the opportunity to meet the new committee. We will definitely be welcoming you. I see the program for you to be at the CIPC towards the end of January, and if you can see how actually we work with the staff, and we'll have a bit of a walk around, so you are most welcome to visit us.
Thank you. The meeting is adjourned. Bye.